Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
As people make their way in, boom. Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take
you
itself
to yourself on your
or
phone?
The game too seriously. Oh, I turned my phone down, sorry.
Oh, my good God.
shambolic start to today's show. Well, thank you very much for listening. We are here to talk about rugby, and there's been plenty of it to talk about. We're in the rugby dungeon. I'm Tim. That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
And that's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
We are currently streaming on YouTube. You can find us. Just go search Egg Chasers, hit subscribe, like, and yeah. Get those comments and thoughts in as we go. Equally, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Cocker, he's at Jay Beardmore, we're at Rugby Podcast. And thank you to our supporters on Patreon, patreon.com/eggchasers. That's all the boring stuff out the way. I didn't get the memo about wearing shorts. Sorry.
It's just a weather thing, mate.
Yeah,
it's just been a straightforward weather thing.
Yeah, 17 degrees today.
Yep, it's
beautiful.
Get the shorts on.
Yeah. I quite sometimes go to, I sometimes go to Greece. You know.
What you're trying to say is you've got a home here and you've got another home elsewhere.
When I'm in Greece, quite often we go in like October or like this time of year actually is really nice. And Brits just are on the beach in like 24 degrees or whatever, obviously. And you get the locals walking past in coats just going, what are they doing?
I'm glad you mentioned this because I've got a theory, which is we always start our short wearing too late. And then finish it too late too. So I think people start wearing shorts about May, but then they finish about mid-November, October, November.
Definitely late October.
So I always same with the lights. So everyone starts appreciating the light when it's too late, and then it's lightest day of the year, and it's the you know depressing decline. So I always try and enjoy things from about late March.
Mm. Mm. But often the weather we've been a bit unlucky this year. The weather has been. Pretty bad.
So cold.
Certainly up here. It's been flipping free. I mean, earlier this week it was below freezing overnight.
Perfect.
For several days. So yeah, we've not been able to enjoy the shorts as much up to this point.
Disagree. I'm always in shorts.
And that concludes our weather small talk segment of the podcast.
Has our lives got that boring that weather is what we talk about? Because we can't enjoy a Negroni
well,
yet.
Let's talk about that. I went to a beer garden all Friday and got very drunk.
Did you enjoy any Negronis?
No, I didn't. I don't think that was on the menu in the Fletcher Moss.
Because I went to Soho on Thursday evening.
I saw the footage from Soho and I felt very, very jealous.
It was ridiculous.
Was it really?
To the point where it was almost impossible to get a drink anywhere. I managed to get one glass of Albarino in a little oyster bar.
Is that it?
And one pint... which got a takeaway pint, was stood on the street enjoying a takeaway pint alongside hundreds of other people. And the police came and moved everyone who was not sat down at a table.
Move them where?
What?
Where?
What?
Along.
What? Honestly.
Just move.
What?
Just get.
Oh,
get
I don't want to get into this now because that is. If they did that, that is outrageous. Yeah.
Well, so I don't know what the laws are on drinking on the street.
That is outrageous.
But well, who knows?
Certain areas.
Go and stop some crime, for God's sake. Well, jeez. Anyway, sorry.
It was very good to get amongst it anyway.
Good. Well, actually, I will sort of segue us back towards rugby via an email from Peter Shaw, who's emailed contacteggchasers@gmail.com.
Peter Shaw.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a doctor.
And among his many things that he's written about, which I might mention a few of those as we get through the games, he said at the end of his email, I'm also attaching a picture of my bar at home because I've come to the realisation I'm a drinking man with a rugby problem. in that I always set my bottles up in a scrum formation. And he sent us a wonderful picture, which I'll chuck on Twitter, because I think this is a good idea. I'd like to see other scrum formations or back lines of your booze. He's got an Italian Aperol representing Parise at number 8. A Glenlivet Scotch at flanker.
Small bottle.
Representing Hamish Watson. A Bombay Sapphire gin for Marrow at Lock, Amaro for Castro Giovanni at Prop, and Rochambeau Irish gin for Rob Herring at Hooker.
Lovely.
Among his lineup. I will tweet that one, but...
Very nice.
Thank you very much, Peter. And on to the rugby. A quick scan over the news. What's been going on, Phil?
Ooh, a few things. Obviously, we had the Lions coaching announcement earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
Any surprises from that? In that for you guys?
Well, I mean, they are there on merit, don't get me wrong, but I also kind of think that they're kind of uninspired too.
So I really like Townsend being in there.
Mm-hmm.
McBride and Neil Jenkins just feels like we've seen this before, certainly in Wales,
yeah.
and the Lions.
You've triggered me.
Go on, you're often triggered.
Yeah, no.
What are you triggered about now?
Kicking coaches for the Lions. Why? Can anyone tell me why they need a kicking coach?
Well, I haven't. You said this, and I think a bunch of people have told you. Oh yeah, kicking coach is really important strategically in terms of assessing the opposition, the game, managing the game plan, and supporting with all that kind of stuff. So it isn't just Owen, George, Johnny, Dan. Hold the ball in two hands and use your foot.
Well,
swing your leg.
So the thing is, I do know that Jenkins does do things like kicking exits. So that's fine. So my contention now is not are kicking coaches necessary, because I think they're probably not necessary, but should they be renamed and be called strategy coaches? And if they are renamed and called strategy coaches, why do we need someone who historically is able to dissect a set of sticks with a ball to do that strategy?
A rose by any other name still smells as sweet. So does it really matter what they're called?
Yes, it does.
It does.
And do you know what? What really got me about all this is the amount of people that stood up for kicking coaches with nothing more than pseudoscience. Well, it might help if they get the jeeps. He might be able to run on information. I can run on information.
I want to be a quad coach. That's what I'd be if I could be added. Lions quad coach.
Well, here's where I got to this whole thing in the end, right? Which is, kicking coaches, if they were really important to do a closed skill for kicking, which is what most people assume that most kicking coaches do, and actually that is the majority of a club's kicking coach's role, is the closed skill of kicking. If it's that important, why don't they have their own individual kicking coaches?
So some people do.
Gareth Steenson.
Yeah, but why don't they bring them on tour with them, like a golf caddy?
So some do, as in, what's the name, Dave Aldred.
Oh, yeah.
Toured with, I think, George Ford and Wilkinson, and I've seen him do stuff with James O'Connor.
And Johnny Wilkinson is seconded with England, but then obviously doesn't go back with George. But I think he regularly keeps in contact with Owen Farrell and George Ford.
The fact that he goes with England, I sort of think that it should... So George Ford should show up with his briefcase, his tie, his little jacket, and also Dave Aldred. That's what he should do. And if Dave Aldred is also shared with Owen Farrell, great. But he should show up with Neil Jenkins, and then Dan Pickett should show up with someone else.
Basically, it should be like assistant attack coach, basically. Because it's what you do with the ball, and the kicking's a huge part of that in the modern game.
Yeah, so I wonder if they should... The kicking coach literally does just kicking, and the strategy stuff is so important... Go and get a strategy coach, but then are we then straight?
Well, it's basically like you have a forwards coach, but then you might have a line-out coach.
Yes,
and you have an attack coach, but you also have a kicking coach. It's the same dynamic. One's a sort of overarching, and one's a specific element.
But there's also in that same guys. Well, there's also the skills coach and the attack coach.
Yeah,
and there's probably, depend on the setup, there's probably massive overlap between those two jobs. I think part of it. Certainly in this instance, not speaking about any others, is that Neil Jenkins is probably very good on tour, as in he's good and he's fun and he brings the camaraderie. And that's a key part of getting the Lions together when you've got such a condensed window of time to get the team spirit and get them playing in the right way. You actually you need characters like that. Like Matt Stevens toured in 2013, not because he was the third best prop, but partly because he could scrummage on both sides, but also partly because...
Lad.
Just bring a professional comedian.
Well, maybe that's an option. but there's always... A professional comedian is going to be on the outside, isn't there? There's something about being there, having been there and done it.
I just think the idea and the people... What I couldn't quite get over is... people disagreeing with me on this.
Why you were triggered?
Yeah, because if it's just teaching kicking and these guys are the best kickers in the world, maybe some of the best kickers that have ever walked the planet statistically, right? Do we think that 6 weeks with a different kicking coach will improve, make them worse, or they'll probably stay the same? And I'd suggest they'd probably broadly stay the same. It could actually damage them because they're so finely tuned, because they're so good already.
Well, I suspect trying different things generally will be of benefit. Like putting people in different scenarios, getting them thinking a different way, is generally of benefit.
But it's like a golfer changing his swing just before the Masters.
No, but it's not.
Not necessarily.
Cause Neil Jenkins isn't saying, hey, George, completely change your kicking technique.
No.
It's strategic.
I think we've
gone way too far down this rabbit hole.
I know that. I'm just amazed the amount of people that don't know that. Like, yeah, you absolutely need a kicking coach. No, you don't need a kicking coach. Strategy coach, fine, but call him that.
I think you might be right on Gats just wants lads on tour a little bit.
I'm not sure about that.
To get that atmosphere straight away. There's stories of the last tour that the coaches used to have proper drinking sessions.
But this is just going down like... The rabbit. Like, this is almost like superstition. Like, just bring him along because he's a good lad. I can't get on board with that.
Because I wouldn't go along the... I think just a good lad, it's underselling it a little bit. It's the importance of the team building.
Yeah.
You talk, JB, about the importance of drinking a Negroni with your buddies.
Because
it brings you closer together.
Absolutely.
And that bond, the painful experience and the bonding is really, really important, particularly when you've got such a condensed schedule.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what we should do. You should grab the Lions on this day book and let's see if there's anything in there. As we're talking Lions, just grab that book.
The stuff I've learned from this is absolutely brilliant.
18th of April.
Lions on this day. 21st of May. 18th of May. 10th of May. Ooh.
18th of April.
April 1993. Lawrence Delalio scored a try and Nick Beale kicked three conversions as England beat Australia 21-17 to win the inaugural World Cup Sevens tournament. What's that got to do with anything?
That's not Lions.
What's that got to do with anything?
I watched that on a rugby tour, like under-12s rugby tour. We went to like a holiday park and... somewhere. I can't remember where. South Wales, I think.
Also playing in the victorious English team was scrum half Matt Dawson. The trio all went on tour South Africa 1997 with Delalio and Dawson.
That's a really tenuous one.
Come off it.
That is tenuous.
Come off it. Hang on.
How many Lions tours have ever done anything on the 18th of April?
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
I mean, some of the old ones were like 6 months long.
Crikey.
That's a very good point.
I'm not sure this one is really that relevant, but here we go. 1980 tourist Ray Gravel was admitted to hospital with... I can't read it.
With what?
I can't read it. It's too awful.
Can you give it to Tim to read? Okay.
No, it's not funny. It's not funny. And now we're laughing because it's inappropriate.
Oh, no.
Shall we stop there?
That book is an abomination outside of touring window time.
I'm not going to read it. It's not funny, all right? So don't laugh. In 1980, tourist Ray Gravel was admitted to hospital with diabetes.
Oh, God. No.
I can't do it.
Don't. We should... It's not funny.
Not funny.
We're not laughing at it. Shall I try?
No.
No, because it's just a fact. We're
just
reading
a fact,
from a book.
It's just a fact.
We're not laughing at it.
We're laughing at the book.
I admitted to hospital with a diabetes-related infection.
It's not funny.
That caused his right leg to be amputated below the knee.
Wow. Yeah.
Despite the operation, Gravel's health problems...
Just put it down. Put it down. No
stop. Don't keep digging, please.
That is all. What are they doing?
Why is that
in a book? Yeah. This book is called The British and Irish Lions on This Day: History, Facts, and Figures for Every Day of the Year.
Unbelievable! Wow. I'm glad that we reached.
I mean, the 18th of April. That's JB. I mean, you were right. I have learned things I didn't know there. Yeah. But I'm not sure I needed to particularly know those things. God. If I can just put it mildly, I read ahead in that little paragraph. It got worse.
It got a lot worse. I'm glad we didn't finish it off.
Other news.
Yeah, please. Thank you, Phil. God.
The European Rugby Players of the Year nominees were announced.
Oh,
okay. I didn't see this.
So, there was... How many is that? 15 players were announced. Everyone apart from one... is from the semi-finalists of the Champions Cup.
Let me guess.
So a load of La Rochelle, a load of Toulouse, a load of Leinster.
Okay.
And a load of... a few...
Jack
one
Conan?
Bordeaux. No Jack Conan.
Robbie Henshaw?
Henshaw is in there, yes.
Yeah.
Henshaw is playing his way into a Lions shirt.
He's been
great this year.
He has. He really has. What did you make of Paul O'Connell endorsing Owen Farrell for captain of the Lions?
I've got lots of thoughts on this. And I want to link it to something which I want to talk about later, which is directors of rugby and leadership and all sorts of other bits and pieces. Effectively, yeah, I guess, you know, he's a good leader. I don't think he's the best player. I don't think he's the best 10, but I think he's a bloody good leader.
That does link onto another thing, which is Gatland saying he might not pick... England players because of their schedules.
Yeah. And then sending his coaches to bloody Doncaster.
Yeah. And
do you know that?
Yeah.
Was that not a joke? Was that not a joke?
No.
Townsend and Tandy.
I saw the picture of the two coaches, and because they had face masks on, I thought it was someone making a joke about two bald blokes at Doncaster.
No, it was.
I'm pretty certain it was Townsend and Tandy.
Oh, to see Saracens, yeah.
Yeah. To watch the Saracens.
Of course, that makes sense now. They were playing Saris.
Yeah. But what exactly do they think they're going to learn?
God knows. Because they've only seen them 3 weeks ago.
And Doncaster allegedly are furious. Two Owen Farrell high shots. No TMO, just getting away with whatever he wants at the moment.
Go on, Phil.
Yeah, back to the nominees. There's one nominee who has played 60 minutes of Heineken Cup rugby.
Who might that be?
He's injured for a lot of the season.
Say again?
One of the nominees, Leinster player, has played 60 minutes of Heineken Cup rugby.
How can they have got in as player? What? That's a farce.
It is a bit of a farce. It's Ty Furlong. He's obviously an incredible player. But has played 60 minutes in the competition this year.
That's a joke.
But some teams... like lost all their games and got to the quarters. I mean, this isn't...
One team did lose all their games and get to the quarters.
This isn't a normal year.
I think...
The 60 minutes does seem a bit... ridiculous. So, other nominees. Aldrete. Levani Bottier.
Yeah.
DuPont.
Yeah.
Gaudin from La Rochelle.
Yeah.
Jalibert from Bordeaux.
Yeah. He could win it.
Jerome Kano. Hugo Keenan. Marchand from Toulouse. Matsushima from Clermont is the only one not in the top four, the semi-finals. Entomac, Raymond Rule, definitely, Raymond Rule's class. Actually, in both the recent games, last 16 and quarters. Will Skelton and Josh van der Fleer.
Excellent. One little message from Paul Tinks on the live chats said Ronan O'Gara was kicking coach at Racing when he was much more than that. It's just a name for another coach, and it's quite often a stepping stone for early on coaches.
Well, that's cool.
An excuse to get your mate in. So I think you're probably right on the
attacking assistant.
He's one of the boys.
But then, it's not a stepping stone for Neil Jenkins.
That is his career.
But yeah,
it's a way to crowbar your mate in there. Yeah. And someone who's good on tour.
I get that
and can add some value.
Yeah, I do not doubt the value of Neil Jenkins or kicking coaches. For the record, in fact. Dan Bigger described him as essential for his entire career. So I'm not doubting that. I'm doubting the role in the context of a Lions tour for 6 weeks.
Very good.
I did like the people who were disagreeing with you, who were kicking coaches themselves.
Oh, yeah, that was marvellous, wasn't it?
Turkeys voting for Christmas.
Yeah. They're worth their weight in gold. Well, that's funny you'd say that. I think the same thing about rugby podcasters.
I'll just break this up with one quick email from Billy, who talks about loving the pod and stuff. And
obviously.
He said lots of stuff like that. He said, equally, this message is sent with sadness. It's kind of very bittersweet, this one. Hmm. It's a message which is sent to portray gratitude nonetheless. Last week, my best friend took his own life at the age of 31. He was a larger-than-life character, diminutive of stature, yet a giant of a man. Simply put, he was the greatest player almost every single one of his peers played with, an imperious player with a mind that was three steps ahead of any other player on the pitch, and a stomach which was three beers ahead of any player off it. He was truly a once-in-a-lifetime player and a once-in-a-lifetime friend. And Billy just basically was saying how amazing the rugby communities, all the people that have known him and other people that have just rallied around. And I think the reason I mention this, you know, quite a sort of, you know, a dark message, and feel really sorry for you, Billy, but it's just a message to sort of say this is actually what rugby does. Even when we're all disconnected physically and we're not able to get together in the way we are, Billy just said, actually, the rugby community and the people that he's known for years, that he hasn't seen in ages, hasn't played with for ages, have just been absolutely amazing. And I think it just speaks to the calibre of humans that you get in rugby. So if you've not gone back to your local rugby club, or you stopped playing and actually you're sort of feeling a bit disconnected from the world, just, you know, get back to your local rugby club, because it's starting to open up. Just go down.
Yeah, and to the point around kind of friendships and relationships and team bonds that are forged in the battle of rugby are, from my experience, stronger than any. And it is testament to that fact.
Yeah. Mm. And so, Billy, I could have made this exactly the same point without mentioning the difficult thing, but I just thought, actually, in the context of it, it just shines a light on it. And I thought it's topical, given that, you know, rugby clubs are starting to open up again. So get down there, because they are amazing places. Mm. Cool. Phil, news.
Other news. So Rainbow Cup are going to have some law variations.
Yeah, this is cool.
Some of which are being trialled in Super Rugby, AU and Aotearoa. So the three notable ones are red card replacements,
mm-hmm, love it.
After 20 minutes.
Big fan of that.
Goal line dropouts if you're held up. So
I really like that.
Five-meter scrums.
Well, I like this because it's... What I like is you've got to be really accurate. I mean, it could... Austin Healey made a good point. He said it could potentially give too much weight to the defensive side, not encourage the attacking side, but you're going to have to be on the money.
Yeah,
but I like the pressure.
I'm happy to see less repeated scrums.
I'm not sure if I agree with you there. I just think that holding the ball up is too much of a reward now. I mean, I'd almost be looking to engage with a player 2 yards out and try and drag him over the line and hold him up. Because it's such...
I hadn't thought of that. But also, I might just, like, lie flat on the floor, 15 men across the goal line.
I think that's a reasonable way to go. I mean, I've seen it, because I think Aotearoa would do it, or AU do it.
I think AU are doing it at the moment.
It doesn't strike me as a massive change to the game. It's not the end of the world.
No.
But I prefer it not to happen.
And I love, there's been some incredible goal line stands where you have had repeated scrums. There's an Australia-Argentina one a few years, a good 5 or 6 years ago, in the Rugby Championship was amazing.
Don't forget Bath versus Sale in 2017.
The 6-3.
What a game that was.
I love those, but I think too many scrums are ambiguous over... A penalty is given and it's ambiguous over who caused the penalty.
Yeah,
so fewer scrums isn't necessarily a bad thing. The other one is something that has been trialled in Super Rugby Aotearoa and actually came into effect deciding the Chiefs Crusaders game this weekend, which was the captain's challenge.
I love this one most of all.
So this is, the captain can challenge any try-scoring decision... Although they need to be specific. They can't just say, I want to look at every single bit of play in the last minute, 5 minutes up to that try scoring, or any specific foul play, or anything in the last 5 minutes of a game. And in the Chiefs Crusaders game, Chiefs got a turnover with about a minute left on the clock. Crusaders challenged it, but the challenge was incorrect. So they lost the challenge. It was deemed to have been a correct on-field decision.
Ooh.
So it's quite an interesting it's quite interesting. I do worry about, same as I mentioned before with the ambiguous scrums, the more times that you review slow motion footage of incidents, particularly rooks and mauls, the more you will spot, well, actually multiple infringements. So it might get everything very pedantic in those last 5 minutes anytime a team has something that they don't want to happen.
That's fair. Well, I think the two prerequisites for this working is, one, it means the TMO can just back off a little bit. You don't need to pipe up every few minutes with a, oh, you need to have a look at this. Just, you know, maybe you can let stuff go because the captains have got the opportunity. And presumably it's much like cricket or tennis. If they make a challenge and it's upheld, then they retain the challenge. So, you know, leave the players and the referee a little bit more TMOs. You can just shut your trap a bit. And I think that would be for the betterment of the game. And equally, the other thing is, if a ref hasn't spotted it on the field, then he can skew it in those 50-50s with well, I didn't see it, so I'm going to stick with on field.
Yeah.
Mm. On the court thing, I think it's a good shout. I do not understand. Well, I do understand why people say it, but there is a school of thought that this doesn't incentivise. It does wind me up, this. That it incentivises players cheap shotting other players.
That's absolutely ridiculous. That is absolute nonsense.
I love the idea that, look, here is your shot for England. Okay, like, they've just got some rowdy plumber on the field who's going to go. I mean, you'd know who it is.
Yeah, Warren Gatland's in the stands, so don't worry. You can just go off for 20 minutes. Your team can lose a player for 20 minutes, and you can be off the whole game. Just go and wallop someone around the head.
Can I run through the idiocy of this plan? So you're going to have to get someone from outside the game to do it. Because if you're actually involved in the game in any way, your career would be so adversely affected by being known as the guy who comes on to hit. You probably wouldn't even be allowed to play because your bans would be so long, and you wouldn't be making any money because your fines would be so high. So exactly what you'd be doing, I don't know.
Well, Dylan Hartley could come back out of retirement just to be like the henchman.
Yeah, just we would know, wouldn't we? And then we could target him. So it's ridiculous. The other thing as well, which I think people forget about this, and I'm sure many, many papers on criminology have been written in this regard, which is the actual sanctions or the severity of a sanction isn't that effective in stopping people doing what they're going to do. The chance of being caught is a lot more effective. So if your train of thought is, this is world rugby or rugby not taking player safety seriously, well, I guess that there's a good chance you don't play the game to start with. But let's say you do and you know what you're talking about. Well, that's absolutely wrong, because the biggest disincentive is being caught, not the actual length of the sanction.
And 15 broadcast cameras on professional games now, you're going to get caught.
Nobody wants to lose a player to a red card.
And even if you get away with it within the 80 minutes, you don't get away with it, generally speaking, afterwards. And you find yourself with a hefty ban that's going to have massive consequences for your team and for your own career.
Let's just picture this scenario. Leinster versus Exeter. And Leinster theoretically put one of their best players on the bench and they call up some thug, because they think in the first 20 minutes they'll get more of an advantage by having this thug run around trying to target Joe Simmons. And then after 20 minutes of not having another player, they can bring their slightly better player back on. Nuts. So no, that is not a thing which is likely to happen.
Speaking of officiating, friend of the pod and all-round good egg, JP Doyle is back with the whistle in Major League Rugby and appears to be very much enjoying himself.
It's not my first week doing this. Okay. Let me do it.
It's going to be the area.
Get out of there.
A little frustration going on here.
Right amongst it now.
Obviously, Seattle a little frustrated. Toronto being the aggressors. They want to assert their dominance and, you know, step on the throats a little bit here. And that's just what you got to do.
So why are you doing that?
Sure.
How about you play your game for the blue team?
Yes, sir.
I love it.
Yes,
there's a whole video doing the rounds on Twitter, which is just some great JP.
I can't believe we don't need JP allegedly in the English game. I just can't believe that he's surplus to requirement.
I know. I really like
it's,
him.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Two other interesting bits of news.
Mm-hmm.
Fiji Jura and Moana Pacifica have been granted licences from, I think, New Zealand Super Rugby to potentially enter teams into the 2022 competition.
Wonderful.
Don't know. Maybe. I literally don't know enough about the situation to say if it's going to be good or bad or I don't know.
But
I think it's external investment to create two pathways for talented Pacific Island players. Which you're right. On the face of it, it sounds brilliant. There could be disasters if it's badly influenced or badly organised, but it does sound very good to me. And the other one, this is an interesting one. TJ Perenara is reportedly being tapped up by the Sydney Roosters to go and play in the NRL because Sydney Roosters have a massive problem. They've got multiple injured hookers. So TJ Perenara being picked as a hooker.
Feels like a very expensive way to get a replacement hooker, doesn't it?
Well, and this must be also because New Zealand Rugby don't want him centrally contracted anymore.
Do they not?
Imagine being that good. You're just like, well, I can take or leave TJ Perenara. The guy's class.
Potentially, yeah. I really rate him. I actually think... So he's playing in Japan at the moment.
Okay.
Now, I don't know what the situation is, whether he's on a Ben Smith or Dan Carter type sabbatical.
Okay, where he can go do a short-term stint and then come back. Oh, that'll make sense.
Which might be possible, but I think he is class. I actually think he would be amazing. I think possibly the one role he could be better than rugby union scrum half is NRL hooker. I think he's absolutely perfect for that role.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know really enough about the role of an NRL hooker, but what it does strike me is maybe there... I don't know, it just feels to me like there's a little bit more publicity there than maybe rugby need, because it does feel like a very expensive way to get yourself a player from a different code. And I can't think of many players that have gone from rugby union as a scrum half as a rugby league hooker.
So I
can't think of any.
I've never seen it before. I can recall.
Well, I think the thing about rugby league is, except for the couple of big Bosch men or absolutely rapid wingers, it doesn't really matter.
I don't know.
They're all kind of relatively within certain boundaries of size and shape, generally speaking.
Hooker and halfback are two where it is quite a specific role, because you tend to play kind of left and right as halfback, dummy half.
There you go.
But I think Perenara, his physicality, his strength, his speed and his handling skills are perfect for that role.
It nearly went the other way round. So Kieran Cunningham was about to be signed by the WRU. They literally didn't know where to play him. He was a rugby league hooker.
But
he'd have to be scrum half, but that doesn't sound right to me that he'd be any good at that. No, maybe he would be, I don't know.
Scrum half rugby union is too technical.
So I looked up, one of the things, I looked up the sizes of rugby league hookers. So just to see, so TJ Perenara is 6 foot and 95 kg.
Is he?
There or thereabouts.
That's bigger than I thought.
Yeah, Perenara is a big physical scrum half. So I looked up the three hookers. I looked up were
Malcolm Arca.
Not Malcolm Arca. Okay. James Roby.
Yeah.
Who is shorter and lighter than TJ Perenara?
Oh, there you go.
Kieran Cunningham, who is listed as 107, he's shorter, but listed as 107 kg.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
I don't know where the hell you would play him if he played in. Because he was stocky. Kieran Cunningham was...
Gareth Hawk. Did you look at Gareth?
I didn't look at Gareth Hawk. The other one I looked at was the Australian great Cameron Smith, who's same, I think he's an inch taller, but about 5 kilos lighter than TJ Perenara.
That'd be cool. I might watch the odd... NRL game.
I'd really like to see it. And NRL, it's a rich sport. Like Sam Burgess did not leave Bath and England money for pittance.
It is a well-run, good tournament. Yeah. I mean, it is really, really cutting edge as a sports organisation.
Sonny Bill didn't leave Toulon to go back to the All Blacks.
Thursday night, UK great Cal Eastman was playing for Leeds.
Oh.
Cancel bloody Sky Sports. Oh. I'll never need this ever again because there's no rugby on it. Wrong.
Lions coming up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a mistake. What are you doing?
I don't know. I don't know what I've done or why I've done
just
it.
Just wait a couple of months.
Yeah, wait till after
then
the
I
Lions.
Immediately resubscribed for £18 a month for Sky Sports F1.
Yeah.
18 quid a race. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
That is quite a lot of money.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all the kind of weird and wonderful headline news of the week.
That's the news.
We did miss the idea that Gatland said it would be a coin flip for English players if they were... if they're in a 50-50 situation, the fact that they're not getting released, means that they might not get selected.
Bullshit.
I'm not sure it is.
So we've seen this before. As in, Gatland has had players who've been playing in it. He's had Faletau, he's had Bigger, he's had other players playing in England. And if they're good enough, they will get picked. Now, the 50-50 thing will be an interesting one. And I probably do agree, if you've got two players who are almost identical and you get one for an extra couple of weeks, you're probably going to go. But, I mean, where are those coin tosses going to come?
Yeah, I can't think of two.
You're not going to pick a lesser player.
No, for no you're not.
And if he's you're better anyway, you're going to pick him.
And this
exactly. Faletau's playing in England. Faletau will be going on the Lions top.
Yeah. Over, I guess, who would be the guy? Like Moriarty would be the other option.
No, you're not going to pick anyone a bit ahead of Conan. Would be, there you go. Someone in form playing really well, number eight, Conan.
Debuters?
Debuters in England. Debuters over. Who's the.
Reece Ruddock?
Yeah, that is a good charge. They're 1A and 1B. So, I'd still pick
them. I'm not sure. Do you think that conversation is going to be had?
I'm not sure that toss up is going to happen.
Yeah.
I'll tell you two players who are very similar who were playing this weekend in stature, Stuart Hogg and Jack Noel. They're they're physically, they're basically the same height, basically the same weight. Similar speed. One's a little bit faster top end, one's a little bit more steppy, but they're both that powerful rump, that powerful chest. Yeah, great to see.
So what's going on here is it might have been earlier, but let's say it was November, some time ago now, it was said, well, that's the international window and our premiership is finishing on June the 26th, by the way. So international windows are international windows. Warren Gatland and the Lions opted voluntarily. It wasn't pre-organised. They said, we're going to have an extra 2 weeks of tour getting together and a game. And the Premiership said, OK, well, you don't just get our players just because you've decided to do it 2 weeks early. And I think basically all that's going on here is the Premiership are saying, well, you don't just get to say... So we'll have your players. Yeah. Like, don't you think the Lions, a massive money-making spinner, should actually say, you want players 2 weeks early? Premiership clubs are, with no crowds and with no income are spending a ton of money on these players. It's reasonable to come to an agreement with the Lions where you say, you're making a lot of money out of that game at Murrayfield, television money. Just give these Premiership clubs a little bit to recognise the sacrifice that of that they're taking by paying them a load of money and you're taking them when they're due for their services.
I think there's a few things going on here, isn't there? There's like this competition between these two organisations, Premiership and the Lions. Lions seem to think that, kind of like you're implying, that they're kind of too important and therefore, because they've had a game, the Premiership need to say, yeah, fine, take our players. On the other hand, they are very important. And I think there's some common sense middle ground here because what the Premiership needs to remember, and I am phenomenally grateful to all of the owners in the Premiership for funding all this throughout throughout the pandemic and whatnot, because it does cost them money. And there are different ways they get grants, there's different ways they structure their businesses, but ultimately they've ridden this thing through and it's cost them an awful lot of money. So I'm very grateful for what they've done. But the counter side to that is, in order to get last season done, and then to plough through this season, and then to get all the internationals in, which are all the things which make the money to make sure the BT Sport comes in.
Within the international windows that are pre-agreed.
Yeah. But to get all of that done, they've had to ride the players bloody hard.
Yep.
Massively.
Yeah, since rugby restarted.
Yep.
Now, if these players are being threatened, and this is kind of where I really think it's a little bit underhand, actually, using the players as almost like a bargaining chip.
Which side's using it like a bargaining chip?
I'd say the Lions, more than anything else.
I think it is.
They're saying, well, awesome. You know, you might not get picked. Now, that might be serious, it might not be, but I think the Premiership also have to have a think about that and think, well, okay, it's very rare that a player is good enough to be a Lion, and then they've got to be lucky enough to be in form during that time period and hope that all the competition, all the bits and pieces fall into place so that they do actually become a Lion, because you could be good enough, but you might not be good enough at the right time. You could be good enough, but you might not be as good as your competition.
Yeah, or you get injured.
Yeah.
Or something else stops you from playing.
And also, only two teams will be playing that weekend, which will be who are Exeter Chiefs.
Exeter and Bristol.
And Bristol.
And so using that as a test case, let's say Sale Sharks don't make it to the Premiership final. Sorry, JB. Let's say they don't for the purpose of this. Alex Sanderson, absolutely no way in hell, and Simon Orange as well, owner at Sale, there's no way they're saying to Tom Curry, sorry, you can't go to Jersey. So that's what they're saying now. Yeah. But when it came to it, they're not going to say, don't go to Jersey, don't play at Murrayfield. It's not going to happen. Because is not going to happen.
You increase the value of your assets, i.e. Tom Curry, by him going on the Lions.
Tom Curry would be massively resentful of that, rightly so.
Yeah, that will not happen.
I'm telling you, that will not happen. This is just, at this moment in time, it's a negotiation that should be happening behind the doors. And I don't know why Warren Gatland made a public statement. I think it was really silly of him to say it. Because, as you say, it puts players in an awkward position.
Yeah.
This isn't their fight. And actually, it's at boardroom level. Lions need to go, we're making an absolute shed load from this tour. Yes, we'll give you a little bit of cash.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I just think that that you underestimate Premiership Rugby there. I think they will hold the ground together. They've done it before. Sale have done it before. They didn't let AJ McGinty go to the Barbarians. I mean, that's a slightly different thing, but still. Mm. I think that they will hold firm. Mm. I do think it's ridiculous for Saracens to take this stance, though. Saracens have said...
Well, they're a shareholder with Premiership Rugby Limited.
So it does show that they have solidarity across the entire organisation. Yeah, I actually think that Warren Gatland's comments have probably increased that solidarity.
Yes, and I think the Lions should pay. But there'll be certain players, for example, Stuart Hogg, who will definitely be on the Lions tour. No question whether he's available just for the test matches.
And could be in a Premiership final when they're playing at Murrayfield.
Yeah, he is not. He will definitely tour regardless of whether he's available.
Tom Curry will definitely tour even if he's in a Premiership final.
Yep, and he will be in a Premiership final, I guarantee that much.
As for the. Just before we move into these games, a wonderful bit of philosophy from Pen the Baker on our live chat on YouTube right now. Life is like a box of chocolates. It doesn't last long as long if you're fat.
I guess
that's true. That's prophetic there. And with that, we'll move on to the actual rugby this weekend.
Righto.
Where do you want to start? Friday
there's
night?
There's so much stuff to get into. In fact, I wish we should have just spoke about all the Premiership and then got some news
the
later.
The most significant game was today.
I agree with that. I think today killed off the top four challenge for two teams. For one team.
Leicester.
Yeah. I think the top four challenge is done now, which is a shame because they were really building something.
I mean, they're 12 points off top four at the moment.
Not happening.
That's big, isn't it?
And I'm surprised that Leicester lost going into the game. I predicted them last week that Leicester would win.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's 15 minutes left on the clock and Leicester are 10 points ahead... I am staggered that Bath came back, but fair play to Bath for
absolutely,
coming back.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think it's a poor performance by Bath.
A great result.
Great result, very poor performance. And they're built back to front. The more I watch this team, the more I think it's absolute. Whatever's going on in their coaching, it's just wrong. I mean, for them to be where they are. I'll tell you a really interesting little anecdote from this week. Steve Borthwick was doing the press rounds on the Zoom calls, and someone asked Steve Borthwick, "So you and Bath are, you're similar sort of teams. How do you see it panning out on the weekend?" He did not take kindly to this at all. He's like, "No, they've got more investment in their squad, and also their coaching team has been been together a lot longer than ours. They're much further on than we are." And I think he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. They are built back to front. They don't seem to have any basics. They had no scrum. Their defence is okay. They like to hit, but they don't like to defend. They're all about attack. Their breakdown work is sometimes good. It's sometimes shoddy. I just think their basics are awful.
So. I actually quite like their scrum. They struggled a bit a few times, but they've got a bloody good front row. And Obano, Jack Walker, who's starting today, and Will Stewart. I think Will Stewart's in superb form.
Will Stewart is an exceptional player, but they got penalised off the park at scrum time.
Yeah.
No two ways about that.
But the Bath, in terms of their overall structure, that they did struggle with... Matavesi compared to George Ford, 10 is
they won with a guy who's not a 10 at 10. And they came back from 10 points down with 20 minutes left.
I have to correct you there. They won with the 10. There is a 10 at 10.
Because Orlando Bailey came. But, you know,
but yeah, I'll give you that, Tim.
They did win. They played most of the game with a 12
or
at 10.
They played the whole game with either a 12 at 10 or a kid at 10.
What we're looking at.
Yeah. Right. Against the starting number 10 for England.
Yeah. I think what we're looking at with Bath is a team that should be dominating English rugby. I really think think about the back rows, okay? Just a blank sheet of paper.
So you've got Bristol, Exeter, Sale, Harlequins in this league, they should be dominating English rugby.
I think they have got a squad the equal of Bristol. Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair to say.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. So imagine that you had just a blank sheet of paper, and you were picking, for instance, like the best back row in the world, and just listed all of your back row. You'd probably pick three of their guys fairly high up. I'm not saying they're 1, 2, and 3, but they're probably like, you know, 7, 15, and 20. I mean, they're bloody incredible players.
Yeah, they've got a bunch of incredible players. Yeah,
yeah, and I think they are massively underperforming compared to the talent. Now, this year in particular is difficult for them because so many of their guys are internationals.
Yes,
like you've had more than half the Premiership season without. Underhill's been injured, but he would have been with England without Faletau.
Watson.
Yeah, Watson, Jonathan Joseph.
Jonathan Joseph didn't go with England in the end, and he's been playing quite well.
He's been in and out.
Yeah, because he went in. He was in with England in the autumn, which he missed games, and he was in the shadow squad. Yeah. And then he had the little ban.
The thing is with these players, though, right? Is
Redpath as well.
Is that you know?
Yeah, Redpath.
Like, you know that they're internationals.
Yeah.
And then you've constructed a squad of internationals.
Yeah, that is a problem.
Yeah. So you know what you've got, and they've re-signed them. They've kept this team together for a fair while now. I really think that if they had a coach the quality of, well, frankly, Pat Lam or Baxter. Or Borthwick.
Pat Lam is, I think he's the best paid coach in the world.
Yep.
And I think you could legitimately make a case for this with Bath. Could you say, had this season not been structured in the way it is, where you have games week to week to week to week to week, which has a disproportionately large effect on teams with international players, this year more than any other year, that could potentially be worth 2 wins out of 16. That it could turn 2 of Bath's losses into wins. That's not an unreasonable thing to say with the amount of players they've lost. And if that were the case, then they're around top four.
Which is what they achieved last season.
And I think that's a fair shout. I would say this though: if your job is to construct a rugby team, don't buy internationals. Like, you know, have a few by all means, and maybe promote a few through the academy, and they play really well and they become internationals. Don't keep buying in internationals.
Which internationals have they bought in recently?
Or indeed re-sign them. Like, you have to construct a squad which is balanced, because you're trying to win the Premiership. Mm. You're not trying to just win the occasional game with a few players.
Hey, you're preaching to the converted there, because I've said for years there's no point. You might as well get a load of South Africans in. There's actually no point buying top-end English talent into your squad. And, you know, look at Harlequins and the difference in their side when they don't have... when Marler, Brown and Kerr aren't England internationals versus when they are.
And that's a good example, isn't it? That's an example of a team which have got really lucky with international call-ups, have got the consistency. But then, when you look at Bath play, you don't think, oh, yeah, if only they were together for a bit longer. You look at them and you think, they're clueless. They're absolutely clueless.
Well, I'll put it another way. Sorry, Phil. I appreciate I'm hogging the mic a little bit. But I'll just jump in with Quins as well, and I'll say, don't you think out of 16 games, had Marcus Smith had what you wanted and been an England international, that could have been worth at least a couple of defeats for Quins that are wins? And then suddenly Quins are in 7th or 8th position.
Quins are very, very lucky.
I don't think you can make huge sweeping statements like you are with Bath in this particular season. I agree the effect having internationals has had, and I dislike the fact that is the case, but I don't think you can just write it off, because I think Quins could quite easily, if Marcus Smith had been England's 10, as so many people were clamouring for, they'd be 10 or 15 points worse off, and Bath could be 10, 15 points better off if it was a normal season.
I think, yeah, look, Quinns have been lucky because obviously Marlowe's an excellent player and he's been awesome this season. Mark Smith's been awesome. I mean, on form, Danny Kerr's probably one of the best scrum offs in the Premiership. His try scoring form certainly suggests that.
Yeah, and he's hugely influential on them. Yeah. And Brown is arguably the form English fullback, albeit Max Mallins after this weekend might say a thing or two about that. Yeah.
The Leicester team that faced off against Bath today was not the same calibre, man for man, except for George Ford. And like they didn't even react to George Ford. I mean, George Ford was kicking over the back three of his head continuously all game. I was thinking, like, are they not going to be aware of this at some point?
Did he do a spiral bomb today?
Did he do a spiral bomb?
They would have mentioned it if he'd done a spiral bomb.
I don't remember anyone mentioning one.
Maybe
they didn't then.
He must not have done.
No.
Must not have done a spiral bomb.
There are a few things about people talking about kicking, right? I heard someone the other day describe how you execute a kick by kicking through the ball. As opposed to what? Like, what else would you do? Like, kick past the ball?
I'm just trying to think.
There's no other way to kick a ball, is there? Except for kicking through it. Slice the ball?
You can do like a punch kick, as in...
No follow through.
Yeah, no follow through. You stop as you make contact with it.
Yes, you could do that.
Imagine you're trying to put backspin on a snooker ball.
You can also do the spiral kick to touch where you kick it off the outside of your foot.
Slice it almost.
Yeah.
Banana it.
Well, it kind of goes straight. Well, that's how I used to kick it, but almost your toes pointing inwards.
Yeah. It's one of those phrases.
Are you a kicking coach, Tim?
Yeah. Well, I can be. I'm good on the beers, Gats.
Yeah. You want a 6-week contract? Yeah, it's just one of those things. It's like it's something you say to sound. It's one of those things that I think, well, obviously that is the thing that you do. You kick through the ball.
Well, yes. The one thing I will say for Bath today is, you know, and you have been critical of Stuart Hooper. I think you don't win a game in the manner that Bath won that game without being a pretty united group of men.
I think, strange enough, with the players, I don't know if I can say this. I just think, they are so... They're so bought into that. Forget it. It doesn't matter.
So I agree with your statement.
Yes, I agree with that statement. They're very bought into it. They are a very united team.
And Leicester are... I think Leicester are a really well-organised, well-drilled team. They're good defensively. They're very good tactically. They are not superstars. George Ford is a superstar. The majority of this team are not superstars.
Tell you who is a superstar. I'm certain of it now. I know I said it last week and the week before that. And Tim said it multiple times. Freddie Stewart is a superstar.
He's a bona fide superstar.
You just feel so like, oh, it's all right, Freddie's back there. Safe. Everything's okay.
Jesus Christ, he comes from every single angle to catch that ball.
Yeah.
And he gets up and he's so tall.
He's reading the game.
But he's always under the ball. Yeah, he's always under the ball. You never sort of go, like sometimes with Elliot Daly, who I don't blame Elliot Daly for because he's not a fullback.
Yeah.
But those times where Elliot Daly's had to sort of use all of his gas to cover 50 metres to make up for the fact he was out of position. Freddie Stewart's just there.
Outside of maybe Israel Folau, I don't know who gets up in the air better than Freddie Stewart.
Maybe Dan Bigger
on his own kick chase. But kicking the ball to him... Yeah. He looks like an absolute superstar. I thought, what's his name? Looks good. 12.
Dan Kelly.
Dan Kelly looks very good.
Although,
yeah, very good. So, what did Borthwick say this week, which you all like? I certainly liked it. He said that, as they're building this squad, the three things are focused on: defence, breakdown, set piece.
I thought you were going to go defence,
line speed, Wolves.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way to start. If you get those foundations in.
Yeah. And that's why I think Bath do need credit. The team that was on the pitch in the last 10 minutes when they came back from 10 points down to win the game, they're breaking down a very good, not man for man necessarily, but a very well drilled and intelligent team. A team that had controlled the game really well.
Intelligent, except when Jasper Visa gives away a brain-dead pen.
For Leicester to win that, they have to play not a perfect game, but a very, very high-end game.
Everyone has to play at the maximum of their ability.
Pretty much. And then as soon as Visa has a little tantrum, which was so stupid.
I mean, I like alpha male moves from alpha male men. But yeah, it was stupid.
And like, I always thought the penalty was a bit harsh, but then, you know, don't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah,
that'd be easier, wouldn't it? Did it? And it all came from that.
Well done, Bath. Then.
Yeah, yeah. Well done, Bath. And there was something. It will come back to me. It will come back to me. There was something pertinent that I felt. But what I will say, this is from Burge on the live chat, who says on Quinns, we just sort of mentioned the comparison between Bath. Quinns have constructed a great team and a decent squad, but are in trouble when Marcus finally gets the call-up he deserves.
Yeah, disagree.
Because he is so unique. Is there a bigger drop-off between 1A and 1B? Maybe George Ford at Leicester.
Mm.
What do you think about this? George Ford was doing interviews during the week, and he was asked about the situation at 10 for Leicester Tigers. And he said, basically, no, he didn't say basically, he did say this, he said that he's very happy with the strength and depth and this, that and the other. And this is something which Dan Bigger said on Rugby Dungeon, when I was like, you know, how do you interact with other 10s? Because, of course, I think of Dan Bigger as an absolute assassin for other 10s, you know, in his own club. But they both were praising the strength of depth. I just can't imagine that they're serious about that. Or maybe they're so confident in their own ability. Like, if you had two guys who were broadly equivalent, I wonder if they'd be quite so complimentary about each other.
I think particularly in the case of George Ford and Dan Bigger, who know they're going to be away for large chunks of the season, it's in their interest. When they come back, they want to be in a team that's they can push on to win titles.
Didn't strike me that Burns and Priestland worked particularly well together.
Yeah. I think Burns and Priestland, because there was always that question mark over who was supposed to be, whereas George Ford and Dan Bigger, no. I mean, Bigger's arguably the one with slightly more pressure on him from Grayson, but there's still no pressure. Dan Bigger is the starting fly half for Northampton.
Yes.
And that there is no concern or no question from anyone about that.
So they're very happy with McPhillips and
Zach Henry.
They think they're building some good.
Bonilla.
Is he not gone at the end of the year?
Well, I don't know.
He might go at the end of the year. He's still there now, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah. So, it's an interesting point that they must be either very, very secure or they're lying through their teeth, because I can't imagine that they'd be so accommodating if someone was breathing down their neck.
I mean,
there
is an element in most of those player interviews that you just have to take everything with a pinch of salt, because they are always going to toe the party line.
Yeah. Mm. I did remember what I was going to say, and I'm only saying this, I have said it many times before, and it's so easy to say, hindsight is 20/20, but when George Ford slotted the penalty with whatever it was, 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, you got two in the last 15 minutes.
Well, it was like one with like 7 minutes to go that put Leicester 6 clear. They were 3 clear. 6 obviously gives them a 6-point buffer. And as it turned out, had Ben Spencer not kicked the conversion, it would have been decisive. But I have said before that when time's running down the clock, keeping it near the opponent's line and giving them 100 metres to go is actually not a bad position to be in. And sometimes taking 3 points and then conceding all that territory, which is so hard to get.
I mean, Leicester were 1 point away from beating a team who scored 3 tries to their 1.
Yeah.
So I quite enjoyed the fact that they were kicking their points all the time, just building that score, keeping scoreboard pressure on and making Bath have to play.
Yeah, but you're right, with hindsight.
Oh, it's always 20/20.
Yeah, arguably it would have been better to stick it in the corner, keep up the jumper, and eat up as much of that last 10 minutes.
Did you notice how Zach Mercer was scrummaging?
Yeah, he was off the scrum until the hit, and he timed the hit. What impressed me about that was how well he timed it, because he timed it so that he arrived from out of the scrum, not bound on, to his shoulders up the second row at the moment they hit. It was very,
It really stood out to me that. You think you've seen quite a lot of stuff, and I've never seen that before. Like one, did you see it, Phil?
I didn't notice
like
it.
One hand on, one hand on the deck. So one of the reasons that's interesting to me, aside from Bath scrum actually got battered, but actually Bath have got a great scrum coach too.
When you say battered, it was all hinging pens. It was they never took a step backwards.
If you're hinging, you're getting battered.
No, I know, but they never took a step backwards. It was, they were technical pens.
Well, if you're hinging, you're not doing a great job. So either way.
I think saying getting battered is a bit...
They were getting battered.
Bit of an exaggeration.
Look at the pens. They were getting hammered. Mm. If you... Have you ever seen the video about social loafing?
Yes. No. Well, I know about social loafing from my psychology days. Yeah, there's just...
So there's a social loafing video on Facebook, YouTube, and they've got a... I think it's a bunch of kids. It might actually be All Blacks. I'm not sure if it's All Blacks or kids. It's one or two. Let's call it All Blacks. And they're just doing, like, clapping in a circle. So, like, you clap and you clap really loud, and then you clap and you both then start clapping less loud, and I clap and I clap less loud. Yep. Because, you know, as you know, Tim, social loafing, right? You don't clap as loud because everyone else is doing the work for you.
Yeah.
So they were applying...
It's also why communism doesn't work.
Exactly right. So they... and scrimmaging. So they're saying, like, you might not be putting in your maximum effort because you think the guy next to you is putting in their maximum effort, and no one can really hold you accountable. So Ireland got over this little problem. They used to be building their scrum from the number eight. So they'd start with the mindset the number eight does the most pushing, even though that's clearly false, just to make sure that number eight in the back row were really, really pushing.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that Zach Mercer was actually pushing.
Very good. I like the game theory element of it.
Mm. You are right that you know, last week we were saying I think Leicester might challenge, and I came away from seeing Leicester against Newcastle thinking, yeah, that
they can challenge,
and yeah, you're right. In one conversion from Ben Spencer, and obviously there's 80 minutes contributed to that, but in that one conversion, any chances I think were dashed.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now they're in a battle to try and get top six.
If they want top six,
they want top six. They do.
Leicester, if you ask any fans, they do. But I guess the point I'm making is this is a young team
on a journey.
They are on a journey.
They're on a journey. Yeah,
team on a journey. But they don't have the strength and depth as some of the other teams who will definitely want to be competing in. The Heineken Cup, it's not always the best thing to get top six. That's the point I'm making.
I look at their squad, and I do think, are they spending their salary cap? It doesn't feel like they are.
They've cut so many players over the last few years.
Yeah,
and like more in season, they've cut players.
Well, technically, they're still paying for
four or five of them.
A bit of Manu Tuilagi, and they're still paying for a whole chunk of Jordan Taufua.
Taufua, I think, has gone legitimately.
No, they're gone, but they would have had to have paid him off.
No, because Taufua re-signed, didn't he?
Oh, he re-signed. The others that they severed,
Noel Reid, Greg Bateman.
They're still paying for them now.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So they'll have money to spend. They probably are spending the cap, but they will have a big chunk of money to spend next season and beyond.
And if they've got a good bunch of players now, what do they do with that salary cap? Because I think what they should do...
Give it all to George Ford. an extra 400k for George Ford.
Lock up the younger players for even longer.
Freddie Stewart,
that is what
George Martin, Dan Kelly.
Van Portfleet.
All these guys, just like, you know, give them some more money, because before you know it, they're going to be starters, and then they're going to be really good starters. And
Joe Hayes.
They'll all go
Joe
to
Hayes.
Although his discipline was bad when he came on today.
Then they'll all go to England, then you'll have wasted your money. So go and buy South Africans.
more
South Africans.
Liebenberg and Brink.
And let's jump from sort of that battle up the top to there's another gap that has appeared below Leicester. That those four are now adrift, and we can sort of we can just mention Worcester in cursory fashion. They are bad.
You've got to ask questions now.
They are bad.
They've obviously made some management decisions, haven't they, at Worcester, and they've said, okay, we don't really like Solly. We're going to go with John Thomas. I think probably looking at Solomon leaving sooner rather than later. They don't look any better under Jonathan Thomas than what they did under Solly.
No, this was pretty much as close to full strength as they can put out.
Yeah.
Subject to...
With a few injuries.
Yeah.
Duncan Weir, Nick David.
Yeah, yeah.
Chris Ashton.
Milani Nanai. Yeah, but this is the strongest team that they could put out.
Yeah.
So they were going for this game, and they got battered.
They got absolutely battered.
By a very good and buoyant Harlequins team, who are getting results all over the place.
To pieces.
Yes.
Yeah, it's disappointing. One win for Worcester, a team which I thought at the start of the season were well coached, well put together.
Yeah,
they seem to have gone backwards. It's a shame.
And actually, it's kind of what we had always complained about. Well, what I still complain about with the lack of relegation this season, and looking like if it gets signed off by the RFU Council, the next four seasons. Just one thing on that, by the way. Again, so the story's been out for a little while now, that the proposal to extend no relegation and maybe expand the Premiership to 14 teams for up to 4 years. What? So the Premiership clubs appear, if Chris Foy from the Daily Mail's article is to be believed, behind closed doors, they appear to have come up with this proposal, which then goes to the RFU Council to get signed off. What are the RFU doing signing that off? Because aren't they I'm just thinking about this in basic terms. Aren't they a union that represents all rugby union clubs in England? Like you and me, Didsbury Tok H, me at Broughton Park and Phil Sedgley Park. They represent those members, and they're signing off unilaterally a call that's gonna actually peel the Premiership away from every other club in their whole pyramid of clubs.
But so in my mind, I don't care about that. I don't think it is beneficial to have the pyramid structure. I don't think that professional rugby and amateur rugby
interface. I understand that, but the RFU shouldn't be going. Yeah, great.
I don't really get why. I mean, if I was a Premiership, I think I'd go one step further and get rid of the RFU altogether. I don't know why.
I think that will happen in 4 years.
I don't know why they need them. I mean, I seriously do not know. Yes, there's the unholy alliance that goes on between the players and whatnot. But it strikes me they'd be in a much easier world, a much easier life, if they did get rid of the RFU and just went their own independent way.
But then you've got the best brand in England is England Rugby and the Six Nations.
Yeah.
And so everything, all the best players go through that. So there has to be, even though they, in some regards, they don't need each other. The RFU needs the Premiership because it needs the England players. The Premiership needs the RFU because it needs the global stage for their superstars.
Yeah, there's people in the RFU who will tell you that, you know, it's all about the RFU and it's the future, you know, and that is the future. There's people in World Rugby who will say that they believe that the club game is the future. There's lots of different thinking about which way the game can go, and I don't think anyone knows for certain until it actually develops. In terms of the Premiership and the ring fencing, my view on this has been very straightforward, which is you can ring fence your league, providing you've got all of the other rules that go with it. And as for amateur rugby, which is what I think the championship should be ultimately.
No, absolutely not.
Well, I just, you know, you'd have to.
Absolutely not.
We don't know the counterfactual of a different structure.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do. Look at France. Similar size population.
That's not a counterfactual.
As in a different model, a different way to go.
Yeah.
So France. So this is what England. This is what rugby in England should look like. And a lot of people go, look at the championship now and say they can't compete and teams aren't going to come up, so there's no point having a structure that includes them, just ring fence it. But that is only the situation it is because of decade or two decades of massively underfunding the championship, the RFU paying for every Premiership club to have an academy which has fed their own playing squads, having parachute payments for teams coming down, and massive disparity in the amount of money between Premiership clubs and Championship, so you can't compete. But the perfect example of what it would look like if you'd spread the money a bit thinner is what's happened in France, who have two professional divisions. The TV deal is split between the two of them, two-thirds mm-hmm. to one-third, so you get actual proper money down in Division 2. As a result, they're able to invest in infrastructure, better stadiums, loads of thousands of people start going. They're growing the game in areas of the country that have not been rugby traditional hotbeds, like northern France, Brittany and stuff, where Vannes are challenging for promotion to the Pro 14 now. That would be the equivalent of Leeds becoming a rugby union hotbed with 7,000 people turning up to Headingley and getting into the Premiership, which is exactly what rugby needs. Clubs like Newcastle and Leeds and Sale to get 10, 12,000 people again. And, you know, a team in Cumbria or a team in Norfolk or whatever, that's what's actually happened in France, because they've come up with a TV deal which includes those two leagues, and it's gone so well that they now have a professional third division.
Yeah.
And the population of France, the traditional amount of rugby playing people, the rugby television audience is all more comparable with England than England is with any other country that people try and point to, like Ireland and New Zealand, as examples of how they should run it. And so the actual example of what England should do is right there, 14 miles across the channel.
Yeah, so it doesn't strike me necessarily as that the best way to go, or the way to get the difference, way to get rid of the disparity between the Premiership and the Championship, is to actually make it a bigger disparity between the Championship and the level below that, or then the level below that and the level below that. And I also don't think that we need that many professional players or that many professional teams. I don't think it's a good way.
Do you think France should just say have a shot top 14, and that would be better for them?
Well, each model depends on what the members want and what the owners want, because ultimately it is their money. I would think about things like,
but the owner, what's the owner's got to do with it?
Everything.
Every single one of those. Every single one of those Premiership rugby club owners bought a rugby club when they knew relegation was part of the deal. You don't get to buy your way in and then change the rules.
I think you do.
You do, clearly.
that might be exactly what.
Exactly what's happening.
But that's cartel behaviour.
Well, again, that's fine, because they own the thing. They own it. So you do have to respect that it is their capital. And they get to make these decisions. Now, on the broader issue of rugby, we are looking at all this concussion debate and all the things which are coming down the pipeline allegedly at some point. And I do think we'd be very wise to separate off a big portion of the amateur game, right? And that could be all the way up to the Championship from the professional game. And I'm not entirely sure we need more professional players. I don't think it'd be good to have a weaker, like Pro De Deux, exposed to all of the issues which the Premiership and the top 14 are going to be exposed to at some point.
That's a really weak reason to make rugby
and also,
amateur outside of Premiership.
And also, we do not know. There is no counterfactual to say, what if we just regionalise the Championship?
You said this before, and I get that. Yeah. But all I'm saying is,
and we don't know. We don't know what that looks like.
All I've said, I'll tell you one thing: we don't know what it looks like. We don't know what English club rugby looks like when the top division doesn't act like a cartel. That's what we don't understand. And when the RFU funds academies in Nottingham and in Covent, I'm trying in the Coventry. Obviously, there's Wasps, and in Cornwall, in Penzance, rather than just giving Premiership clubs, which already keep all of their own TV money themselves, and the RFU pay for their academies too. I don't get that.
I agree with that. I don't know if there is a massive advantage to putting money or giving Premiership clubs responsibility for Premiership academies.
Well, they don't give them responsibility. They give them responsibility. Yeah, they also give them a shed load of money.
And that's what I'm saying. I don't know if there's an advantage to doing that, when actually, if they just said, do you know what? Premiership rugby, keep your players, do whatever you do. We're going to keep this money and we'll distribute it among all of the community clubs. And I wonder if you'd get more or less players. I don't know the answer to that, but I do think that it's purely my view, but that professional rugby should be professional. I look at things like the NFL, for example. They don't bother with academies. They just have a league. And I think I would like to. I'd like the Premiership clubs to be doing less, actually, and then just hive off and have their own little thing. It does, if you're a real big club guy, and you've got a Championship team, I think you'd rather go and watch lots of local derbies. I mean, that's what would get me excited. That's what gets me excited for my club. That's why I don't have a Championship team, I guess.
The biggest games from having played in that league, the biggest games was always the biggest teams coming. It's the opportunity to go and play a Leeds or an Exeter.
Saracens.
Saracens. Like that would be, if there were fans in, Doncaster would get twice the number of fans that they would get on a normal weekend, because you've got the opportunity to play the best in the world.
But that's like a once a,
once
a year thing.
Well, because you'd have, I don't know, at the moment, yes, but Ealing now, they're a very good team. When London Welsh went up, you had, Irish and Bristol and Newcastle at various points, or Bristol and Irish, or Bristol and Worcester.
And when London Welsh first came up, Sale almost went down had London Welsh not had that points deduction.
Yeah, I do think that getting rid of relegation is a mistake in the guise it is. But yeah, I don't think that closing off the league is a disaster.
I think we're all in that with that. And I'm so the one of the reasons why France can do what it does at the moment is because of the money. The like there is the enormous TV deal, but there is more money in the game. Like a lot of the Championship clubs, if they didn't have the handouts from the RFU historically, which I know a lot of those have been turned off now, they wouldn't be able to make ends meet at all.
But they would if the TV deal was if you took a long term.
It's not the TV deal though, is it?
No. But it's a great example of what you could do. And here's what you could imagine happened. So in France, on a Thursday night, you sit down and you watch a couple of Pro De Deux games.
I do like that.
Yeah, then over the course of Thursday to Sunday night, the last game is an 8 p.m. kickoff on a Sunday night. In between, you have games all over the time. And when there's a top 14 and a French second division game on, that's 16 clubs, that's 8 games and 7. There's 15 live rugby games every single league weekend on Canal Plus, spread right across the schedule. It's like the European Cup round of 16 that we loved. It was that much rugby every weekend.
But
Tim, I'm trying to do a podcast here. I don't have enough time to watch 16 games every week.
You wouldn't watch them all, but my point being is you get that kind of one channel subscriptions worth it kind of feel. 2/3 of the money, like I say, goes to the top 14, who could say Racing and Clermont could say, hold on, I don't want that second division club to get a third of the cash.
I'm interested. Has anyone actually watched a Pro De Deux game?
We don't live in France, and we can't get it on Canal Plus, can we?
The reason I ask that is even I don't know if it. I'm being deadly serious now. Is it worth watching?
So I've seen some highlights of it. There's always some ludicrous either fights or 100 meter tries.
I'm in. But one thing, just to jump back, you have said weeks past and on some YouTube channel videos, you've said, oh, the fact that the French got this massive TV deal, this is really bad news for English rugby. What you're not recognising is that 2/3 of that French TV deal is for the top 14, 1/3 of it is for the French second division.
Don't see why. But what's the context?
Well, because you were saying, look at the size of this TV deal. It's
No, look at the size of the increase of the TV deal.
Yeah, look at the size of the increase of the TV deal. But part of that is the fact that they're spreading it across 15 games, not 6.
Are you saying that the 16% increase in the French TV deal is for the Pro De Deux?
No, what I'm saying is it's because Canal Plus are buying 15 live games a weekend, not 6.
So you're saying that they've had an increase in games?
They now broadcast every single game, yeah.
So the increase in the French TV deal is purely down to the increase in broadcastable games?
They now have a whole weekend schedule full of games, which they can then advertise in between, so yes.
So did they, and I don't know the answer to this. Is that a new thing, as in that new schedule?
I think broadcasting every single game is,
I would be very surprised if the Premiership turned around to whoever it is and said, look, we've just gone and bought the Green King IPA or whatever it's called. Give us 18% more.
But that's now. But that's what I'm saying. You're comparing apples with oranges when you say the Championship has been done. Like every French second division club has an academy and has to have an academy and has to have a stadium of 5,000 to get in there. So you're comparing a league which has been hobbled at the knees for the last 15 years and comparing it to a team that actually someone's taken a long-term view and gone, in the future, we can grow something really big here, and that's what's happened in France. So you have to take a long-term view and go, let's tie in the Green King Championship, and it will instantly become way better.
I'm just not sure there's the appetite for it.
No, I
like the aspiration, and
I like that.
Yeah, I like that vision. And certainly a few years ago, when we were watching the playoffs for the Green King IPA, and we were watching Cornish Pirates and London Welsh, and
the Worcester
Bristol game,
was trying the best rugby on TV.
But those individual things are absolutely amazing. Great stories, great spectacle. I'm not sure if there was an extra 6 Green King IPA games available per week, I certainly would. I might catch some of the highlights.
Yeah,
I certainly wouldn't be watching them.
Well, they did used to be on TV.
Of course,
we didn't watch.
Yeah,
but if you were from Penzance, from Cornwall, you might tune in and watch Cornish Pirates.
You might, but then
there's
what's viewing numbers of the Premiership,
there's an issue there of because you've got Sky anyway, do you watch it on Sky or BT rather than go to the ground?
And I think both is true. You'll watch the away games, you'll go to the home games more likely. Anyway, all I'm saying is Van in Brittany didn't care about rugby 5-10 years ago either, and they do now.
Which is good.
They've signed the Colossus Darren Barry.
Darren Barry to go with Henry Trinder.
Hell of a lad.
Yeah, Trinder.
Trinder, Darren Barry and Abendon.
Benders.
This was kind of what part of my video was talking about, which was we're going to start losing those sort of squad players, and I always thought it was going to be to the top 14. I never thought of it going to be to Pro de Deux.
Well, that's because one third of their TV deal is for Pro de Deux.
Pro de Deux is maybe the one that's going to bleed the players.
And Premiership, like the squeeze middle, which we've spoken about for a few years, but that has just been exacerbated because of the cut in salary cap. So going from 7.6 million to 5.6 million, it's massive. And Semi Randranda is not taking a pay cut.
Nor should he.
George Ford is not taking a pay cut. it's the squeeze middle. It's the bottom end or the middle players, which is not to say that they are bad players. They are very, very good players and they're very important players. But that is what's going to happen.
Well, just let's take Darren Barry, for example. I mean, a lot of people are listening to this going, Darren who? Right? Good, serviceable second row. The kind of guy that you need coming off the bench. Every club has them. Phillips in Sale you know, they're everywhere. And they are really important when you're trying to put together a squad for an entire season. That's the sort of player that will be going.
But you wouldn't spend a lot on that guy.
No. Well, and that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah. And that is the problem with the squeeze middle, because as all the superstars' payments have gone up, those kind of players, they're actually probably over the last 10, 15 years, the average salary for those players has gone down.
Yeah, because it makes more sense for you to pay for your England players knowing that the RFU will top it up. So you see less of them, you pay them more, the RFU top them up. They're the only people that you can keep. And ironically, the more reliant you get on the RFU, the less you see them.
Certainly this season as well.
I'll refer everyone to our podcast where we actually said, all right, well, if relegation is going to happen, how do we deal with it? And we came up with loads of ideas. My thought is, unfortunately, none of those ideas are going to be part of this thought to just ring-fence the league.
That's the biggest problem.
I have a feeling that there are a lot of changes coming down the pipeline for rugby if they sign off the four-year ring fencing. Now, I know that requires...
It's not just 4 years, is it? Let's just call it what it is. It's done. It's over.
All I'm saying is that there are certain steps that the owners need to take. And I have been told that there are things in the pipeline that they want to get done, but first of all, they need... Because ultimately, what they're worried about is putting their capital at risk, getting relegated, and then getting... an enormous financial loss when they go down. It just means they don't have the stability. They don't have that reliance. Now, what you're saying is right, Tim, because if they had a Pro de Deux, it wouldn't really matter too much because the Pro de Deux is
exactly
a better league. But that's
and they'd
not...
be guaranteed to get good TV money when they went down.
Some TV money, yeah, granted, but that's not the world that they live in. And actually, they can look across the other side of the world to the NRL and say, well, why can't we do something like that? That looks pretty cool. Mm. And they are right. It is pretty cool. It's really cool. So once they get their ring fencing sorted, I believe they will come up with all sorts of other weird and wonderful things.
I hope so.
They bet because
ring fencing on its own.
I'm pretty sure they will, but I can't tell you what those things are.
Yeah, I hope so, because that is where CVC have to earn their money, because ring fencing could be a disaster if it leads to a far less competitive league and fewer storylines and no dead rubber games towards the end of the season. So they have to.
Yep, completely agree with that.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Yeah. Other games. Tim, you were at a game.
Were you?
Yeah, Bristol. Or Newcastle, Bristol.
Oh, good, because I didn't watch that one. So right. Tell us about it.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll start by saying that I really quite like Dean Richards.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's such a wily character. Let me give the best possible interpretation of what happened. His team got handily beaten.
Yeah.
And I was waiting patiently to ask him some searching questions before the programme ended. Mm-hmm. Dean Richards appeared for the interview at the moment we went off air. Which, I think Dean Richards has been in the game long enough that he might know when we're off air and on air. I don't know. But let's just say he came out as soon as he could to have a chat.
Well, anyway,
this is why he's a wily character. Then, the director was in my ear just going, all right, we'll pre-record this one for highlights packages and all the rest of it and for other programmes. And, over to you, Tim, in five. And then the PA's counting down. And the guy who's in front of me, the floor manager, is doing the hand count, like you see on the tape.
Yeah,
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And as I got to number two, Dean Richards went, how's your show on Virgin Radio going, Tim? Just at the point he knew I was about to start grilling him.
Nice.
And he threw a little curveball question in and it was very wily. So
did it throw you?
I giggled and went, very well, Dean. I'll tell you what, Dean, I'm going to count myself in there because I'm going to leave that one on the cutting room floor. 3, 2.
Nice.
Now, Dean.
Well handled.
But it was
fair play.
No, but I love that he did that.
Yeah,
he's a canny, wily.
That's awesome. Bloke. Actually,
well, I've got to say, I've not actually gone to a Newcastle press conference yet. But there are so many wily good directors of rugby. You don't really know until you actually encounter them and speak to them, and you know all the rest of it. My questioning didn't go quite as smoothly as yours, Tim. I had to. I led off the questions to Alex Sanderson on the sales Zoom call. Incomprehensible questions, just incomprehensible.
Do you remember what you asked?
No, not really. In my mind, I wanted to ask one thing, and I asked a completely different thing. And Alex Sanderson's like, "Yeah, no, we couldn't do that, could we? You know, no, sorry, you can't." It was just
how do you prepare for what you're going to ask?
Well, funny enough, I don't.
Okay.
What I do is I attend, and if something strikes me as interesting, I'll then ask.
Okay.
Right. But when I was on the sale call, no one was asking anything. So they were, JB. I was like,
JB, that's what I was going to say. So it's important to listen, because quite often, and this is just talking about interviewing in general, I hear it on the radio or whatever, quite often people don't listen and they have their list of questions and they ask the next one regardless of what the person just said. So it's actually listening and being inquisitive is absolutely right. But I usually write one word down just as a little prompt to remind me.
It shows the value, right, of just having a list of questions. Just simple, any injuries, just things you need to actually know so it doesn't sound like you're an absolute chancer.
Yeah.
Sadly, I was caught out by Sanderson, who now does think I'm an absolute chancer.
Is that 2 weeks in a row you've been caught out by Sanderson?
Yeah, I've got the worst. I sometimes ask some really good questions, but at other times, my word.
That's how you get better, though, isn't it?
I hope so. Maybe he's just got a curse on me now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think of the rugby equivalent of not of going somewhere and not playing well. Well,
is it
whatever
a bit,
it is
like a, it, you see, I'm reading this as like when you
I'm too desperate to impress
when you fancy a girl at when you fancy a girl at school and you just seize up when you go to ask him out. You're just yeah. You've got a bit of a man crush on.
Might be that. And usually I'm effortlessly cool, but for whatever reason it is, can't do it.
But as for Newcastle, and are in a bit of a tough spot. But Bristol, my word,
play well.
Yeah, they after 20 minutes when they clicked in,
yeah, because they lost Sheedy fairly early.
15 minutes in.
Yeah, Johan Lloyd came on and ran the show.
And they made 9 changes. Like Kyle Sinclair, Dave Atwood, Nathan Hughes, Charles Piatow, and a bunch of others.
Yeah,
Lewis and Randra were injured. But so many players fit, and just they went, no, save yourself for Exeter.
So this win is impressive because of that. Because Newcastle, they're a difficult team to break down. They're physical. They're well drilled. Exactly as you said, Dean Richards is a wily character, a very good coach. And for Bristol to go and it wasn't easy, but they comfortably got the bonus point win.
Yeah, you saw in the game. I was watching the warm up, and I was stood right in front of Bristol's handling drills they were doing, and it was so awesome. What you see is every single one of the players, as they do loads of different drills, but they all designed basically to do the one thing. And the attacking player is holding the ball, and they watch the defender the whole time, right up until the point they actually give the pass. They just watch the defender's body. They read the body, and you can see them just trying to manipulate what the defenders are doing, and they. And they have one particular drill where the whole drill is 3 consecutive 2-on-1s or 3-on-2s or something, and it's about calling, giving the pass as late as possible or deciding not to give the pass as late as possible. And it's all basic stuff, but that's exactly what you saw in the game.
If your team is ever going awry, attacking-wise, it's basically width, pace, depth, and pace onto the ball is the most important thing.
Yeah.
The most important thing.
But the ball carrier decision making is unbelievable from Bristol, isn't it?
Yeah, and the finishing of those 2-on-1s and the manipulation of space. Andy Urin does it really, really well. Johan Lloyd does it really well with the kind of holding the ball for the extra second, so you can allow the defence to kind of make a decision.
Yeah,
to let that to trust that you've got enough time to.
You've never seen me do this drill, have you? Very similar.
It sounds it. You do strike me as similar to Johan Lloyd.
You're Welsh.
Yes,
Welsh.
Exactly.
Both male.
Can play multiple different positions.
He's an outrageous talent, Johan Lloyd.
Yeah.
He's going to be the one that breaks the 60-cap rule. I'm sure that's the one that makes Wales short.
Because, he's not leaving Bristol.
No, why would he? Would he?
Exactly.
Max Malins is just class.
Yeah, Max Malins.
Like, who do you pick in Bristol team next week for Exeter? Who do you pick?
Well, that's...
Sir Charles.
That is the storyline, isn't it? A rested Bristol team who are awesome at what they do against an Exeter team who are really starting to hit their straps.
But, like, Charles Piatow, you pick him, don't you? But do you shift him onto the wing so you have Max Malins at fullback?
I probably wouldn't. I'd have Max Malins coming off the bench because he can play in multiple different positions.
Yeah.
But who knows? I would always start Sir Charles at 15.
You have to start Charles Piatow because
of course you start him. Yeah,
he's not on loan for start.
But
so your options are you've got Piatow 15. Purdy 11 and
Morahan
14, or you could go Purdy on the bench and Malins in 15 and Piatow on the wing.
Yeah,
Piatow on the wing.
So Piatow, Morahan, Malins.
I don't know if you just lose too much Piatow. Maybe influence on the game.
But doing that allows him to do other things. Like it gives him a degree of more freedom because he's not got as much defensive responsibility.
That's an interesting thing you say there, because I always think of 15 has been the senior back three position. As in, that's if you're a back three player, you probably want to play 15 because it's a bit cooler and there's a bit more kudos to it and whatnot.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of lads who do not like playing 15 because they like being on the wing for that exact reason.
You can have some more freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just say, well, I'd much rather be on the wing and then I can do more attacking stuff, which you don't necessarily think of when you think of playing fullback. But then, you know, look at, for instance, Simon Hammersley at Sale. He allows Byron McGuigan to go on his little scamps.
Yes,
that's what they do.
Jack Knoll back fit again for Exeter. He loves to go and play off 10 a little bit and
just
go off rucks, go off 9 at ruck time, and but you can't do that when you're fullback.
No.
Yeah, it's much more difficult.
Does Peter Howell straight, was that kind of guy?
Peter Howell can do anything.
Yeah.
Sir Charles can
do what he wants.
He steps in at 10 and gives Tip Eden a bit of a rest.
Yeah, exactly. Steps in at 10, first receiver, 50 yards under the post.
Hold my beer, Tiff.
First phase off a scrum, wasn't it? Ridiculous.
What a game that is going to be. Oh, I cannot wait. When is it, actually?
It's Friday night.
Friday?
Is that Friday?
Yeah, Friday night.
At Ashton Gate?
Yeah. Oh, don't know where it is, but it's Friday night.
No, it has to be, because Exeter don't play on Friday nights.
Do they not?
Nope.
Oh, they are. What, even if BT Sport tell them to?
I think it's to do with the. I think it might be to do with the M. I might be something to do with the M5.
Oh, maybe. Oh, maybe.
Community
maybe.
Traffic.
Oh, yeah. Thing. Okay.
I don't know. That might not be true. Actually, I don't know why. If anyone knows why Exeter don't play on Friday night, but they don't.
It is Ashton Gate Friday night.
Sale plays Friday night out of choice.
Yeah, despite the Friday night traffic.
Mm. Yeah, but if BT Sport ask you, I think you have to do it. I think there's like an obligation to have a certain amount. Anyway,
No, Exeter do not play Friday nights.
Oh,
or Saturday nights for that matter. No, they don't play Saturday nights either.
Hmm.
No, not the Premiership clubs ever do. Exeter don't. I know they don't play Friday nights. There's a reason for it.
Yeah, it's when Steve Parrott is washing his hair.
Yes, that is right. Friend of the pod. That is right. The reason I think it's interesting is because, yes, Exeter did lose in the European quarter. But they lost pretty gallantly. And then they spanked Wasps this weekend.
Yeah, did you watch this?
No, I saw the highlights.
Down at half-time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they just...
But that second half, oh,
yeah,
they were awesome.
I think they're ready to go.
I've made a few noises like those two guys out the Fast Show.
Oh,
suits you, sir. Oh.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an absolute cracker. And Exeter are going to want to put a big result on a big team.
Yeah.
That's what they play for. That's what they're built for.
They've got to lay a marker down on this one.
I think we are
still top dogs.
I think Bristol are very, very good at scoring lots of points against almost everybody, but they can come and start with a bit of physicality, and I think Exeter will do exactly that.
Well, in this game, Ross played well in the first half, and were deserving. Exeter didn't quite click, and then in that second half, Wasps tired a bit. Exeter, their fitness came through, and they just dismantled Wasps.
That Stuart Hogg try where I still can't work out because the camera when you watch the try doesn't show him the whole time. I don't know how he managed to get from kicking the ball
to then gather
his own kick.
So it was at the end of about a 15 phase sequence. And there were at least two or three separate injured players down on the floor.
In case you're wondering, the iPad's around the battery, which has stopped the sound going to the Mevo, which stopped it going to the live stream.
But
as far as I'm concerned, they've seen enough. If you want more, download the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was the end of a very long phase of play. Everyone was dead on their feet. And so it was only Gabriel Ogre and Stuart Hogg who bothered to chase it because everyone else was totally knackered and they assumed it was going out.
Yeah.
It was like, do you remember, there was England-Australia about 3 years ago where something similar happened, and I think Elliot Daly kicked down the touchline and everyone was too knackered, no one bothered to chase, and kind of Kirtley Beale was half-heartedly wandering across because the ball looked like it was going to roll out. And it didn't. It just stopped about 2 inches from the touchline, and Elliot Daly kicks it infield and goes on to score.
Yes.
It was like that scenario.
Yeah, but it was just all I remember seeing before the shot cut was Stuart Hogg kicking it, and then like most kickers do, they don't. That you can't kick and then sprint all in one step.
No, so he kicked through the ball.
He kicked through the ball. And other people were gassed, and he just
gone.
Grease lightning. It was awesome.
Yeah,
it was good. It was really good.
It was a very impressive performance at the end
of
that
game. Well, Friday night.
Did you hear the stat in the game? Thomas Francis scored his first ever Premiership try.
Wow!
Yeah,
Donny Tommy.
No more
Thomas Francis is going to be coming anymore when the Championship is amateur.
Nope. No, there might be. There might be more. We don't know.
That's awesome. One more stat as well that I saw, because Ali Eakin posted a little screenshot of the stats page from his little console after the Bath Leicester game. and I've mentioned this quite a few times, ball in play time. I have a guess.
For which
Bath v Leicester, which was quite an open game, wasn't it, today?
Yeah.
20
minutes. A lot of attacking play.
Yeah, I'll go for that.
31 minutes.
31.
Just to highlight that, out of an 80-minute game, and you,
yeah.
So NFL has 4 12-minute quarters, so you guarantee to get 48 minutes of...
No, you're not.
Oh, no, you're not.
Because the clock run off.
The clock runs. Okay, yeah. All right. Well, regardless, 80 minutes, you actually had 31 minutes of rugby being played.
It's more than enough. More than enough.
Okay.
I'd like a bit more. So a fewer scrum resets. Mm. A few more minutes of ball in play.
Agreed.
No, disagree. we missed a few games here. Did you see Sale Sharks play?
I did. I saw the red card.
My word.
Tip tackle. A 10 tip tackling a prop.
I'd have given a red card for his hair moustache combo. I mean, from Rob Dupree.
It's hard to describe what I was watching in this game. It was one of the worst displays of attacking rugby I have ever seen in my life.
The worst team with ball in hand.
Yeah, the worst team with ball in hand.
It was horrendous. And I just can't... I mean, I don't know what... there seems to be, like... I don't know whether they're just going... Like, so Leicester Tigers are obviously doing something, aren't they? They've set piece, defence, and breakdown.
They're going to get top four.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it. Sale are definitely working on something. Yeah. They're definitely I mean, their defence is pretty stingy now.
Yeah.
Their set piece is okay.
They can bludgeon their way to wins.
Yeah, and, you know, there's no denying their drive and their grit and their determination. They've beaten Wasps with 13 men, and they've beaten a Gloucester team with 14 men effectively for the entire, so, you know, there are some good things there, but some of the attacking play is mind blowing. I have seen players duck out the way over the pass before, but I've not seen it multiple times in a game. And as for the, like, I wonder if when you look at, like, one of their big ball carriers, they say Rob Dupree or Jean-Luc Dupree.
Yeah.
Whether you see him roll, like, at one point, he literally ran over two men. He literally ran over them and carried on going, like those giants in Game of Thrones. But then he throws the ball on the floor, and I'm thinking, like, what do you do here? Do you say, right, this is what he likes doing. He likes running over people and then throwing the ball carelessly wherever he wants. Let's try and polish that up and make it into something useful. Or do you say, right, stop that altogether, roll, present the ball.
You are not allowed to pass, like the old Graham Dorr thing.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is. I don't know whether that makes it... Because, like, imagine trying to play 10 for that lot. I mean, they're going in all sorts of different directions. They must be so incredibly difficult to just, you know...
Bad coaching them, right? Bad attack coach, get rid of Paul Deacon, right, JB? That's what you'd be saying if it was Bath playing like that.
I've got to say, like, there are some questions that need to be
answered. I don't think that, by the way, to be clear.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just being facetious.
I did like... So, Aaron Reed's that try...
Yeah, that was some
class.
Finishing.
That was class,
brilliant,
actually.
Finishing. But it got hauled back because there was, like, two potential knock-ons and a potential forward pass that none of it quite made it. But just to get... The try was amazing. Like, the pass out and then the ball back inside and then the finish was superb. But there was three separate points where the Sale... back line effectively, although I think there was a back row playing in the centre, their skill set just wasn't good enough. And the ball just ends up on the floor.
So I'm going to say, okay, so here's the questions that I wanted answering from Alex Sanderson, which I couldn't quite articulate. Here's what I think's going on at Sale, okay. Right? So I think, and I know that Sanderson agrees with me here because he said so, that Sale are the most physically dominant team in the league. Right now, weirdly, just because you are the most physically dominant team in the league, I don't think that means you are the most physically dominant team in the league. Because just because you've got the physical ability to do it, if you're running over, say, Worcester or Gloucester or Wasps, and you're making 10 yards, well, then all of a sudden, when someone stops you making those 10 yards, and instead of, you know, making 1 or 2 yards, well, you don't know what to do because you're not used to seeing that. So weirdly, I think the most physically dominant team in the league are probably the ones that are used to being in close arm wrestles and overcoming it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Yeah.
Because it's how you prepare for the change or how you mentally go for the change. As in, if you're playing Worcester and you are battering everyone and you find it nice and easy, but then Bath or Exeter or Bristol, or indeed in this game, 14 men against Gloucester, and they're stopping you from being physically dominant on the gain line, how do you react?
Yeah, what do I do now?
Equally, I think you can say, yes, they can bludgeon 10 metres, but actually, I'd say Bristol and Harlequins are examples of teams that, when they make 1 metre, what they do with it, they have the skills to offload. Like, you know, Quins aren't as physically dominant as Sale, but when they make any hint of a break, they have two men running straight alongside, yeah. Offload, bosh, they're through, try.
Yeah, they're much more precise.
Same with Bristol.
Yeah, much more precise. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at Sale and they make these big old carries, and well, here's a ball, just throw it over my shoulder.
I've done my job.
Yeah, I've done
someone
my
else
job.
Can do yeah, theirs now.
And I wonder if the disconnect they have is they are so fit. So Sanderson's reference that he thought that their loss at La Rochelle in particular, they just weren't emotionally right, which I find curious. I don't know how you measure that. I don't know how you improve on something which you can't measure. But that's why I'm not a head coach, and he is.
The World War II bombshell did not do its job.
Oh, I just don't know how you measure that, right? But there again, he might be right, because if he thinks simultaneously has the most physical team and they're not emotionally right, those two things would make sense if they can't deal with, say, La Rochelle, even though the statistics suggest they were just as dominant as La Rochelle in the first half. Well, maybe he is right about the emotion. Anyway, this display against Gloucester made me think that maybe they just need a little bit more work on their attacking play and what the hell they do when they bust these massive holes into teams.
Well, do you know who we're not talking about quite as much? And let's remember, as you said, quite rightly said, they're in third place and looking set for the playoffs.
They will be in the playoffs.
They will be in the playoffs. So
I think that's
great.
They can win the thing.
But the person we're not talking about nearly as much as we have done in the past and should do for Sale to be where they need to be to win, Faf de Klerk.
Why?
Sorry? Well, we're just not talking about him as much. So
you mean he's not as important?
Well, no, either not as important or isn't as influential.
I agree with that. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I don't think he had a particularly good game from what I saw.
I don't think he's been hitting his heights. When he was absolutely unplayable for Sale, like, he was doing everything. He was kicking the ball,
turning over defence, making big hits.
Yeah, smashing Nathan Hughes back.
And I'm not sure you can maintain that level of play for a long time. I think, you know, he's such a special talent. When he does hit those heights, they're incredible. But to get up for every single game must be bloody difficult.
There's something about his style of play as well that's, I don't know how to badge it. It's almost like the predictably unpredictable.
Yeah,
as in you don't know what he's going to do. You just know he's going to do something amazing. Or certainly when he was at his best, the opposition didn't know what on earth he was going to do, but his team around him kind of did know, at least to enough of a degree that what he was going to do, and that meant he was kind of unplayable for the opposition. Yeah, but was creating
totally
loads
and
of
I
chances.
Wonder, now we've got so much tape of him playing the defense, where the defense coaches are going, well, you know, we'll just make this a little perimeter and let Faf run around here, and then, you know, if he doesn't do anything, well, you know, do X, Y, Z, the thing is that they do.
Maybe that is it, but I you know, he does do it from time to time, and he's still a superb player, obviously. Yeah. But I can't remember that. I can't remember seeing so few, like, 40-metre snipes. Yeah.
But isn't that the sort of point I'm, in a global way of making, like Stuart Hooper would make?
Globally important.
Yeah, globally important point I'd like to make, which is when your wildness and, you know, your flair is not getting you where you want to be, relying on the basics is exactly what you need. And so if Faf isn't as electric as he is previously, he needs to be damn sure that, you know, his passing's crisp, that he's there to break down on time, that he's making the right box kicks. He needs to have a bit of Richard Wigglesworth in him.
I was going to say, and what club does it sound like you've just described? Saracens.
So maybe dialing it back a tiny bit. But the same with, like, the Dupreez. So, like, if you're not getting over the gain line by 10 yards every single time, well, you know, make sure you damn well know when to go down, when to place the ball, you know, where your support runners are. But basics.
But Dan Dupreez doesn't sit. Again, Dan Dupreez, for example, I remember him go back 2 years, just make it.
Jean-Luc, that would have been.
A year then, last season. Just ridiculous numbers of incredible offloads. And he's not doing that same element. He's still making the yards.
They are ridiculous offloads. He's still doing a lot of ridiculous offloads to him.
Maybe that's all it is. There's a lot of players just a couple of percent off where they were, but they're in third place. So that if they could just tighten those nuts and bolts, they're contenders.
Yeah, and they've got with that pack, when it gets to knockout rugby and the pressure comes on, they can challenge anyone.
I'm not there. Yeah, I wonder if that pack is perfect for annihilating Worcester and Gloucester.
Flat track bullies.
Maybe, but that said, they beat Bristol and they beat Exeter.
Yeah.
So, exactly. But the one which sticks in my mind more than anything else is Quins, because Quins showed you didn't need to beat them up, you just need to be comparative. And if you're comparative and you've got something else in your locker...
Yeah, which Quins do, and Bristol do, and Exeter do.
Yeah, that is the danger. So my criticism of Sale Sharks is, if they're not dominant, what do they do? And I don't think you can guarantee you're going to be dominant against Exeter, Bristol, or anyone else, actually, who's going to be in the top four. Mm. I think it's completely possible that they are. It's almost likely that they are, but it's not guaranteed.
Mm.
Northampton handed London Irish's backside to him, didn't they?
Didn't they just?
Yeah.
Chris Boyd is another guy that I... he is unreal.
An impressive man.
My boy.
I like him.
He is so impressive. So thoughtful. Like, just... honestly.
Yeah. Thoughtful is a great word, and you know that from the number of times you ask him a question or see a question asked of him, and he'll just take a couple of seconds and go, yeah, I think, and just the fact he takes that little bit of time, even on live telly, when he's just sort of like, no, I'm just going to take this at my pace, I'm going to give that question some real thought, and I'm going to give you a full answer, totally honest, no cliches.
I can't remember what the first question was that he was asked, but he was asked something, and he stopped, he clarified the question. I thought, oh, yeah, he's really thinking about this. He's not just here to say, yeah, and we'll take every game as it goes or whatever it is. He thought about the question and then delivered a just brilliant response.
Yeah,
him and Baxter, I think, are two guys who are particularly good at that sort of thing, like listening, giving you a good answer. And the other thing as well is he had some weird stats about the NRL win rate. I can't remember what the question was. Because effectively, this is how I look at it. Northampton need a lot of territory, a lot of possession to win a game. Because if they don't have that possession, they can get beaten up and they can get ran over. And this is a problem that they face against Ulster. When Ulster turned up the pressure...
Yeah, they were making yards yards in contact, and were then getting quick ball. Northampton couldn't deal with that.
So the first half of that game, Northampton won or were neutral in 80% of contacts. In the second half, that fell to 40% of contacts.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I saw with the once Ulster started getting over the line and making holes, the holes got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it sort of just expanded. So the questions there, like, well, okay, so what do you do to stop that? Are you going to bring in some bigger men? So he's talked about moving Ribbons to tight headlock and... that guy.
Ratuni Yawara.
Yeah, and then, you know, how does that look? But then said, well, ultimately, if I do that, then I'm not going to have the mobility that I need for other things around the park. So that's why we have...
It's a trade-off, isn't it?
It's really interesting stuff. He also thinks that the Lions should have big men at 6, 5 and 4, which sounds like a sales pitch for Courtney Laws to play 6.
Yeah.
Down, all in favour for. All down on that.
100%. Or Reece Ruddock, or Dave Ewers.
Yes. So, I asked him is there a percentage that he has in his mind as to, like, how much possession he needs in order to win a game? And the answer was, I spoke to Wayne Smith about it, and there's some NRL stats, but we can't find that single stat. So it's obviously like a continual balancing act, like the everlasting game of playing with your chemistry set as to how do you do this?
And I remember some stats a while ago. I can't remember where this was from. I think I read it in The Economist, actually, deep down in rugby. But it was saying possession and metres made don't correlate with win rates.
That's right, yeah. And there's one...
Just look at New Zealand winning 2 World Cups, kicking more than anyone else.
Yeah, there's two statistics, something like turnovers or something.
Yeah, I think penalties might have been one of them. It's the turnovers, because if you get the turnover, that is when the defensive... field is most disrupted. Yeah. So if you can maximise your attacking opportunity from a turnover, that's when you're most effective.
Tell you what has struck me quite...
And that's just on that exact point, when Wasps were playing their best stuff at the end of last season, what got them to a Premiership final and got them to almost beat Exeter in a Premiership final, they were really at their best at that. They had, Thomas Young, Launchbury was doing it, and Jack Willis was the best in the game, best in England at doing it.
The turnovers, and also what Wasps had, which also Northampton had against London Irish, and which we were just sort of touching on, that Sale maybe aren't quite where they need to be on, is that, and what New Zealand had when they won their two World Cups, just deadly skills when they had those moments.
Yeah, to maximise the opportunity when it does arise. And that Wasps did it brilliantly last year.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and the thing, what struck me this week is how many directors of rugby or coaches who put up for interview have got the stats at their fingertips. So if you say something, they can use the stats in order to say, well, the stats don't suggest that. Mm-hmm. So they're utterly reliant on it, which has got its pros and its cons. But like the Wasps thing with the turnovers, yes, they got the turnovers, and the turnovers were important in their own right. But actually, I think the reason the turnovers were so important is because it bred confidence throughout that entire team. And then you saw them winning scrums and getting like Exeter-style pick-and-go tries, and then all of a sudden they're doing everything 5 or 6% better. Which I guess comes down to the Sanderson thing about emotion then.
I also spoke to one media guy recently. I won't say which club, but I just said when I was waiting for him to...
Who's your favourite rugby podcast?
Bring the DOR over. and I said, can I just ask, what do you do to prepare for these interviews with the coach? What, you know, do you do anything? Do you chat about like talking points and stuff like that? He says, do you want to see? I said, yeah. And he opened up his file and he said... So here's the average age of our team today, and that's quite a bit lower than normal. And here's the number of there's more appearances on the bench with these three players than there is for the whole team. Well, I didn't say that specifically, but I might give it away who it was. But he just showed me all these statistics, and then sure enough, a few of those came up through the chat.
Interesting.
So it's clearly there's actually an art and the art and science of public relations and interviews and stuff.
They definitely rely on the statistics to tell the story that may... I don't know if they are using them to tell the story they want to tell, or they're your genuine attempts to understand what happened in the game. So, I'll give you examples. Sanderson said that he felt that it was an emotional loss, not a physical loss, because the stats say that they didn't get beaten up physically. I don't seem to remember that. I seem to remember them losing a lot more on the game line than they otherwise did. But the stats tell that story.
When your team's full of South Africans who are very, very physically minded, you need to have a story to tell your players that doesn't attack the core of their being. When you're a guy like Dan Dupree, you did not get beaten physically. We lost that emotionally. Look at the stats. Look at
that's a bloody good point, that is, Tim. That's a flipping good point. I wish I'd have thought of that, because then there's a question there. Damn it.
Next week.
Then he might respect me more. there you go.
But yeah, Northampton, fair play. And just on them, Peter Shaw said, Alex Mitchell does not look like a top-notch professional rugby player, but he sure plays like one.
Yeah, it's a very good point, because he's been in the England camp a few times now. Yeah. And just when he's playing like that, he's amazing.
Just on Northampton, they're the only realistic challenger, I think, now for a top four. I don't think they have it in them. So they will disagree with that.
They're 4 points off Quins, aren't they? Quins and Sale. Mm. It depends on the fixtures, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess
they've got six games left. Well, shall we jump into this week's fixtures? We're not going to dissect.
Just to be fair to Northampton after such a good game, Peter Shaw also says, Furbank with that haircut and moustache looks like World War One pilot, RAF pilot, who just got out of his sop with Camel. Piers Francis is the only centre I can remember who seems to be the main back competing for the high ball. We were just talking about high ball catches. Piers Francis is very good at that. There are no players I would like to try and tackle less than Lewis Ludlam and Tamana Harrison.
Yeah,
very abrasive.
They are real physical.
Another thing
guys,
that Boyd references, he doesn't think there's a better fighter pound for pound than Tamana Harrison.
Well, that's
and he's wrong. Lewis Ludlam.
Well, those two, but that's kind of the this is an interesting point because they are so aggressive and so abrasive. And this is exactly to your point on Hamish Watson the other week, JB. Neither of those are particularly big, which you can get away with, but you've got to have the weight in the pack elsewhere. Particularly if Northampton come up against Sale, for example, they're going to be giving away quite a bit of weight in that pack.
Well, if anyone wants to know anything more about Chris Boyd, may I recommend them to go visit the Rugby Dungeon, where I interviewed Dan Bigger, who talks about his relationship with Chris Boyd in quite some detail.
Can I just say, this weekend's fixtures, as we'll get onto, and speaking of Northampton, oh my word, this weekend's fixtures is awesome, because it's Leicester v Northampton on Saturday as well.
Yeah. Oh. That will be interesting.
And Northampton then, after Leicester, have Gloucester at home, Newcastle away, Wasps at home. They have got a shot.
That's four winnable games.
I don't think they beat Leicester.
Certainly three. I think Leicester will probably do Northampton. However, they can win the remaining three.
Quins, meanwhile, have got, and maybe this is a counterfactual to that point, they've got Irish away, Wasps at home, Leicester away, Bath at home, Sale away. And then, if they need something on the final day, Quins are home to Newcastle. Whereas Northampton are away to are playing Exeter. It could get tight though. They don't play each other, unfortunately. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah. So yeah, the reason I thought Leicester Tigers had such a good chance is because if they beat Bath, they tend to play everyone around them.
Yes, they do.
They're not going to do that now.
No.
Damn it! One point to Bath.
Tough. Thanks to that Ben Spencer kick from the touchline.
Yeah, and that was an interesting call because that was Ben Spencer's call to go miss to loop it over to Will Muir, who finished brilliantly.
Yeah.
But when he had all those forwards and he thought we need the conversion, I remember thinking at the start, what are you doing?
Yeah, keep it tight.
Keep it tight.
Because it's shown they can score from the tight tries. They'd done it 5 minutes ago through Miles Reid.
But fair play, Ben Spencer, he backed himself and nailed it. And yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's do the fixtures, Phil. What we got?
So Friday, the big one. Bristol versus Exeter Chiefs.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Exeter.
I'm so excited.
That would be such a good game if there were fans attending.
Oh, can you imagine?
Such a great game to go to.
Yeah, two good sets of fans too.
Yeah, and local derby.
They probably would fill out Ashton Gate for that.
But it probably wouldn't be that far off, you know. if we could have done, I'd love to have gone down. Yeah, night out in Bristol. Yeah.
Yes!
And also,
but we wouldn't tell anyone we're going, would we?
What I initially thought was...
No one who lives in Bristol, we definitely wouldn't tell them. Phone's on silent.
Bristol don't need this to get a home semi-final. Exeter do. Exeter are only 4 points ahead of Sale.
Oh my God, imagine
that. God, Bristol are 12 points clear at the top of the league.
Yeah.
I still think Exeter do them. Exeter can bring a level of big game experience and physicality that I don't think Bears can match. Oh, I'll take my shoes off because not
unsheath the shoe.
Yeah, my broadcasting shoes. I don't think that they can match them. Simple as that.
Exeter were outstanding in that second half, just as they were very, very good in the second half of the round of 16. I don't think they've put 80 minutes together, and I think I see Bristol nudging this one.
Yeah, and there's something, I think the emotional toll and indeed the physical toll of the two seasons being merged together and Exeter having that absolutely brutal end of season last year when they were amazing, but it will have taken such a physical toll on them that I think they are going to struggle a little bit towards the back end of this season. So, give me Bristol.
I'm going to jump ahead to the Sale game because they're away to Worcester. So, Sale are getting 5 points there.
Yes.
Which means, based on that, even if Exeter got a bonus point, Sale potentially could find themselves in second place by the end of next weekend.
Yeah, Sale will get 5 points away at Worcester. Just on the Bristol Exeter Chiefs thing, I will just say, because Sheedy went off early, injured. I think if Sheedy plays and is fully fit, Bristol win. I think if Johan Lloyd plays, albeit despite him being an unbelievable talent, I don't think this will be the right game for him, the Exeter game. I think the pressure of that Exeter, that suffocating Exeter defence and the physicality won't be right for him.
I actually agree with that.
So if Sheedy plays, give me Bristol. If Ewan Lloyd plays, give me Exeter.
It's going to be big. And then there's tough calls all across that pack. Like, you know, who'd you pick in the back row? You got Dan Thomas, Nathan Hughes. Will Lua be fit? Or will Earl slot in at six?
And then Fitzharding. Fitzharding is awesome.
He's looking great.
Another player who was overlooked when he was a bit younger.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's going to be good.
Yes.
Early kickoff on Saturday is now, once again, a proper rivalry.
Yes.
Geographically speaking.
Yeah, London Irish Quins.
Yeah.
Still going to be Quins. I have developed, like Tim, a soft spot for London Irish. I like them.
Yeah, I do as well.
I like how they play. I like their back three. I think Paddy Jackson's great.
Team of the year 2013.
Yeah, all that stuff is good.
Yeah.
Tom Porton should be looked at by England.
And Ben Loder. And Ollie Hassel Collins.
Yep. All of that is great. However, they do have a soft underbelly, and I think Quins will give them a good spanking.
To our listener who's keeping tabs on our predictions and wants us to be absolutely crystal clear so they can keep tabs on how we're getting on, I will tell you, this is the game of the season London Irish want to win.
Why this one?
Because they're back in Brentford.
At home.
And they all live in the Twickenham area, all the players, and all the fans are from that area, and they... And Quins have had that all to themselves for the last 20 years or whatever it is. London Irish...
Driving their Maseratis around.
What?
London Irish are back, and I'm telling you, there will be massive edge in at Hazelwood this week. I'm sure Harlequins will know that's coming, and that will be used to G them out. But London, this will be treated like cup final stuff for London Irish. They've also got a chance of... They're gunning for top six. Give me an Irish win.
Does this not have the feel at the moment of London Irish being totally up for their local derby in the same way that Saracens have historically got totally up for their Saracens local derby?
Yeah.
And it doesn't even register on Saracens and they just put 40 points
on it. Feels like that's me. Can I tell you something else as well, which should make you worried a little bit? Which is Gerry Flannery was explaining how the rest of the season pans out for them because they're out of Europe. So they've got two game block break. They've been lucky enough to get this far with the same team. I think they're going to complete the whole bloody season with this incredible cohesive unit. And for that reason, I think Irish are going to get a spanking because they're not going to go easy. They're going to put out a full hit out of lads.
Come on, you Irish!
Give me Quins. I think Quins are going to win this. Then we've got under normal circumstances, it would be an interesting game. Gloucester, Newcastle.
Okay.
Gloucester.
Both need a win. I mean, they don't because of there's no relegation, but
both
need a win.
Give a single solitary shit about a win.
They need a win, but they don't really care.
Yeah, they don't care, do they? I think I'm going to pick. If Carl Ferns finally plays, I think he's available for selection this week, as I understand it.
Watch your FRD waiver wire.
Yep. I'll pick Newcastle. If he doesn't play and Mark Atkinson plays, I'll pick Gloucester.
Mm.
And I have no other views on this game outside of that.
Okay. So two friends of the pod going head-to-head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jamal for Gloucester.
He
swings it in Gloucester's favour for me.
Yeah. If
Ed Slater's a friend of the pod. Yeah,
if Jamal plays... Definitely back in Gloucester.
Okay.
Give me Gloucester.
Have you heard the rumour about sales signing Yanni Duplessis?
Yanni Duplessis is about 38, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Are they
signing Yanni De Beer as well?
Osdoran's on his way. Yeah, so Sale are needing a tight head prop. Sam Orange has replied to this on Twitter saying rugby paper don't know what they're talking about.
Ooh, is it in the rugby paper?
Oh, it must be true then. If Sale are denying it, it's true.
Well, this is traditionally...
Yanni Duplessis is 38. Is he still playing? He was at Montpellier.
Lions.
Steve Diamond denied.
Why is it the Golden Lions?
Stephen Diamond denied. Marlon Yard. Faf de Klerk.
Banned me over bloody Marlon Yard. What did we?
Anyway.
Yeah, so they are in the market for a tire prop. If I was going to guess, I would say, of all the people available who they could pick up, I would say they're going to go for Nick Shonut from Worcester, yeah. Putting two and two together.
Worcester said they're not going to let him go.
Mm. I would say he's going to sail. If I was just to guess, looking at who's available, you know.
I know that's been potential that has been touted a little bit.
Potential signings, Shonut would be the one which I would be targeting.
Mm. Yeah, Yanni Duplessis is listed by FIS 39 in November.
Well, I think they need cover. Jake Cooper-Woolley is not back fully fit yet.
Mm-hmm. They don't need it to beat Worcester this weekend.
How do you know?
They're going to absolutely batter them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
pick all your Sale players for fantasy rugby draft. AJ McGinty.
This could be JB's second win.
Third
win.
Why? Why would I pick players from the third place team almost exclusively? Have I not won a single game? What does this tell you?
But then the big game on Saturday. Oh my word! Can't wait. I mean, no. Like London Irish Harlequins is a big game.
Yeah.
Genuinely a big game. The Friday night game is big, and then the other live game on Saturday, Leicester Northampton. Wow.
I can't wait for this. I think this will be a really, really good game.
Spicy. Imagine the crowd.
Yeah. Such a shame. Trying to think about some of the great moments from this fixture in the past. There's
the Ashton Tulangi punch.
Mm.
Yeah. Tom, who got red carded for punching Tommy? Marafu got red carded.
Oh, yeah.
For punching. And then... Wasn't this in the final where Dylan Hartley called Wayne Barnes an effing cheat?
I think that's right. And then just all manner of 30-man brawls.
Yeah.
It's so good. I love it.
But no fans, unfortunately.
I'm going to go Leicester at home.
Give me Northampton, I think. I think this will be really interesting.
I think... It's going to be Leicester. I think Northampton is too susceptible to the things that Leicester do. Basics win rugby games, even though they didn't today. I like Leicester Tigers basics. And, you know, keep your skills, frankly.
You might have converted me. Give me Leicester.
All right. We're all going Leicester. Wasps v Bath on Sunday.
Wasp season.
Done, isn't it?
It's done.
They're done.
Dusted.
I think there is Look, Bath have got good players. They should win this.
Yeah.
They should win every game.
For that reason, let's just pick one of the teams who's going to win.
Do you know what's disappointing for Wasps this week? They had a full hit out. Both big second rows are out. They went for it and they got absolutely pumped. And I suspect that will do it for them this season.
So,
Bath.
You're going for Bath. I'm going to go for Bath.
I want to go for Bath, but this would be such a Bath thing to throw this game away. But give me Bath.
Okay, well, actually, I'm glad we skimmed over that one because the big game on Sunday, Saracens v Ealing Trailfinders.
Is it?
Oh.
Is it? Ooh, that is tasty.
And also, the big game this week is the...
Saders v Blues.
No, the culmination of the Women's Six Nations. France versus England.
France-England, yeah. It gets spicy this weekend.
Yeah, which will be one of the few games... I mean, I'm just looking through the scores here of the Women's Six Nations... England put 50 points on Scotland.
Yeah, they just
England put 60 points on Italy.
Yeah.
Italy put 40 points on Scotland.
What?
France put 50 points on Wales. Ireland put 45 points on Wales.
They need to
France put 50 points on Ireland. Like, there's not actually been a competitive game.
No, they need to do an annual three test series, England-France.
Yeah,
until
this will be a very good game, England v France. The French skill set this weekend in handily putting away Ireland was very, very impressive.
Well, as the Israeli Prime Minister said about the Iran-Iraq war, I wish both sides best of luck.
Ealing Saracens, that'll be interesting. I might treat myself to the pass if I can. I don't know if it's still the same. In the Trailfinder Cup, you could buy a day pass for like £6.
Your option's like... £60 for a single ticket, or become an Ealing Trailfinder season ticket holder, or something. Join the fan club.
Before our live feed cut sound, friend of the pod and Tier 2 Tour veteran Gavin Doyle mentioned that Tadhg Furlong has not or has yet to sign a new contract with the
top
Irish
Top 14,
RFU
baby.
And Leinster.
Ooh.
But with a World Cup in 2023. Do you think Ireland could be doing sabbatical stuff?
So, possibly. Or Sexton played while he was at Racing, didn't he?
Yeah, but they changed the rules because of that. They were so disgusted
by
it.
I mean, surely, unless Ty Furlong is playing in New Zealand and he can't get back, surely they will pick Ty Furlong.
Well, they didn't for Zeebo.
But Zeebo's not as integral as...
No, he's not.
But Zeebo would equally be pretty pissed off.
He would.
He's gone back to Munster.
He is.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting one. I don't know what this means, but dual deal. They had some terminology which I've not heard before. Now, allegedly, it does just mean...
IRFU.
IRFU, but the way they're co-funded or something?
Okay.
Is that a sponsor deal? That'd be very interesting if it was.
I would assume co-funding would mean IRFU. Definitely.
So he's coming back with Ireland in mind then?
Yeah, I think
must
so.
Do.
Yeah, so Andy Farrell's probably looking at that 15 shirt and gone, Jacob Stockdale, probably not going to fill that.
Yeah,
Hugo Keenan's looking good.
Yeah, but you want competition.
You want competition.
Two people. Yeah.
Mike Haley's not cut the mustard. No, Will Addison's a body wreck, unfortunately. Yeah.
Lama
is a bit suspect at fullback at international level. So actually, I think Andy Farrell might go, we need someone solid. Zeebs, get him back.
Get him back. Get him in.
It's great.
I think Hugo Keenan has been very, very good. But I'd love to see, I think those two would be... There's real competition there, which is what you need. Because at the moment, it's kind of one of one.
Yeah,
right,
cool.
Just wrap this up, because I've just realised I've got a CrossFit session at 6 in the morning.
Humble brag.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Doing cleans and snatches.
Is it a heavy day?
I've got no idea.
Are you going CrossFit 3D?
No, I'm doing one in Trafford. I quite like it. It's where I got my cot. No, I can't say that.
Where you got your what? Sorry,
matter.
Did you say?
Is it something?
Did he say car or did he say
he
something
say,
else?
He did say car.
And then
tailed off.
Yeah, I thought you said it's where I got my cock.
No, car, no.
What you get up to in your own time in Trafford Park is that's your business.
Back in CrossFit tomorrow. I cannot wait.
Awesome.
Excellent. Good.
But it's a 6 a.m. slot.
Out the house for 5:40.
I can't do it. I just can't do those 6 a.m. ones.
No, but...
They're the most sought-after slots. I don't get it. It's insane.
They are when I'm there.
No, they always are. They're always the first ones to get booked up.
I quite like... There's something about training in the morning.
It's done.
Yeah.
Well, and you can get in another session.
Later on in the day.
Yeah.
I quite like... Getting it out of the way and getting it done.
Don't swing on that chair.
Don't swing on JB's antique chairs.
These chairs are so uncomfortable. I'm like,
I broke my
hunched up.
Yeah. I broke my Urkel chair this weekend. My
Urkel
chair.
You got an Urkel chair?
Yeah. Do you like that?
You're sitting in the chair properly with your bum right back in the seat. Actually, the only way to sit comfortably for this length of time is to sit forward.
It's an antique rocking chair, and I rocked back on it, and I broke it. Really upset. Anyway, that's enough of that. Wrap this up.
Contact outchasers at gmail.com, your emails, your thoughts. We've had some quizzes sent through, which we'll get to one of those next week. Patreon.com/eggchasers. We forgot to do this shirt giveaway. We'll definitely do it next time, I promise.
Yeah, next time.
Oh, my word. And Twitter, YouTube, exactly. All that. Let the boys play.
Yep, I'll get out of my house.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.